Here we go again.
It's time to talk.
I thought it was April Fool's Day when I heard that one. Get me off the air before I have a heart attack. We will have nothing to see for it. There's been many false dawns.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
The kindness of Cork people will never let you down.
Conversation that matters.
All right, guys and gals, be part of the conversation. The Neil Prendeville Show with Mercedes-Benz Cork. Paper-wise this morning, very disturbing court report on the front of the Echo today of a very brave young girl, only 10 years of age, made a complaint, spoke to her mammy about it, about being raped by her uncle. My apologies, I should have given a trigger warning for this one. It is very disturbing, very upsetting. It was a 44-year-old man, was jailed for 7 years yesterday, and the judge, Siobhan Langford, really summed it up. She imposed a sentence of 8.5 years with the last 18 months suspended, so it's a 7-year jail sentence. And she said, "I have to commend her bravery and her mother for the swift action she took in this case. It makes the front and inside pages of this morning's Echo. A brave, brave young girl. I hope that she manages to put her life back together again and to prosper." You talk about people's safety. The front of the Mail this morning is a warning that's been issued by Gardaí and two different support groups. The one is called, and these are support groups for female election candidates. One is called Women for Election, and the other one is called See Her Elected. And the warning from those two groups, and on Garda Síochána, is that women standing in the upcoming elections are being advised by the Gardaí to avoid the dark, canvass in pairs, never canvass on your own, and turn off all social media comments. So they've all come together with these new safety guidelines, which include instructions on how to report incidents if they are threatened or assaulted, or people come upon them or verbally or physically assault them, or issues related to that while campaigning. Women out canvassing told, don't go alone or don't canvass at night. It's kind of interesting as well, because it was like almost overnight it happened, the posters. They're all over the place now. Again, every single pillar and roundabout and ditch, particularly across the city and suburbs. I had thought that some years ago, were they not trying to organize some kind of a deal or kind of like a truce or a ceasefire with regards to postering, and that they just wouldn't do it. But they're all up again. Some people love it. Some people get very excited and see all the posters up and all of the candidates and their smiley faces. For others, though, it's just another form of littering, because ultimately they don't all come down on time. And then, anyway, your thoughts on that are welcome. Text 0868 104 106. What elections am I talking about, you're wondering? The local elections and the European elections that are upon us. And then, while all that's happening, of course, we have a lot of issues regarding our borders. One of them has to do with the Irish coastline, where a TD is saying that Ireland could be conquered by an invasion force of a few thousand troops, and we could be conquered in a few hours. He's saying that even a drug cartel in South America would have better gear than the Irish Defence Forces. So this is an ex-Ranger, TD Cathal Berry. He said our Defence Forces would be outgunned by many South American drug cartels if they ever decided to come here. Now, that's quite alarming. Now, you might say it's a bit over the top, but I wonder, is it really? Are we ready if anything were to happen, or if anything kicked off? And have we enough in our army and our navy? We certainly know of issues regarding our navy and the policing of our coastal border and the lack of naval ships. I mean, you talk about whether or not we've got enough army personnel in the event of a threat from overseas in whatever shape or form it might come. But that's a story that makes the front of the Mirror today. And then on the inside pages of the Mail, they're talking about our land borders and our sea borders and everything and anything to do with the Irish border, whether it's from Europe or rest of the world or the, you know, invisible border, if you like, with the six counties. But the Mail this morning is saying that there was a convicted sex offender who actually became the centre of that High Court ruling. Do you remember that High Court ruling that the UK, the Irish High Court deemed that the UK could not be considered as a safe country to return asylum seekers, because they'd be sent then to Rwanda? Well, this man was the centre of this High Court ruling, and he happened to be an asylum seeker who was a convicted sex offender but was not placed on the register here for more than 2.5 years. So we are a bit laissez-faire, really, about making sure that everybody is kept safe and who isn't coming into Ireland and where they're going and the reasons that they're here. In other news this morning, and a tourist story that's never too far from this programme, of course, because we've had awful evidence of crashes and injuries and stupid driving. There's an interesting one in the Mirror today where Conor Faulkner, and he certainly would know exactly what he's talking about. He was with the AA for years. He's with the Royal Irish Automobile Club now. And the talk in the article has to do with artificial intelligence that they use in the UK. They use AI that allows robots and cameras to look into the car, and they can tell if a person is using their phone or if they have or they haven't got their seatbelt on. And then AI technology, the robot then flags this issue and the pictures to a human police officer, who then decides very simply, very cleverly, as to whether that person should be prosecuted or not. Cuts way down on man hours, of course. And then the person in the UK gets a fixed notice and they pay it, or indeed they can decide to go to court and fight it, whatever the case may be. But the camera can see, these cameras can see if you're using a phone, if you're not wearing a seatbelt. And did you know, it's not only against the law in Ireland for motorists to drive without a seatbelt or using a mobile phone up to their ear, but also it's illegal for you to be using the mobile phone, say, for instance, on a speaker with the phone sitting on your lap. So that's a new one on me. I actually didn't know that, and I would have thought that that would have been almost like the equivalent to Bluetooth, but apparently not. And then other driving-related stories that make the Popery Nuacht on this morning tell us that they can't get enough drivers for Bus Air and buses, and they can't get enough drivers for, my apologies, drivers, and they can't get enough mechanics to service Bus Air and buses. And where is the biggest problem? Particularly here in Cork. And I have to ask the question, why? I mean, is it the pay? Is it the terms and conditions? Is it the pension? Is it the long hours? Is it the shift patterns? Is it just the driving is too tough, or are there better jobs? Love to know. Text 0868 104 106. And when they had told us only a few years ago that vaping was a very healthy and safe way to cut down or to give up cigarettes, now we're hearing that the flavoured vapes have 505 hazardous chemicals in them. My God, I mean, that in itself is shocking when you thought that you were doing the right thing. Highly toxic, 127 of them are acutely toxic, and apparently another 153. I mean, how could you have 505 different kind of chemicals inside in vape juice? But apparently they do, and it's a worry. And, of course, that's the alarm out this morning, saying that it is a form of cancer that is coming down the track. Meanwhile, for those of us that eat or drive or have a couple of pints or like a steak dinner, whatever the case may be, and we're constantly being told, you have to stop eating so much meat, there's awful problems with carbon emissions, and you got to stop driving fossil fuels and get into electric and hybrid. A lot of the public are saying, But they're taking no notice of it. Half of the Irish adults, according to The Independent this morning, said they have no intention, thank you very much, of changing what they eat or how they drive. But it's not that they don't want to combat climate change, I suppose, but the new research is saying that it's not such a big deal to them. And I suppose when you look at the big super polluters, you can kind of understand why. But so what you eat or what you drink or the flavours in vapes, does anybody like a nice smoky rasher? You know? How about that? Or a nice bit of pork, or remember the old days when you could get Sam Spud's smoky bacon crisps? I don't know if you can get them anymore. They were the crinkly cut ones. Oh God, I love them. Really and truly, ate way too much of them. I know that, say, for instance, Tato manufacture smoky bacon flavoured crisps, and Denny's do smoked bacon and hams and stuff like that. I mention it because apparently they're now saying that the smoky flavour could also be bad for your health. And we've got about 40% of ham and bacon sold and produced in Ireland is smoked. And the method used, apparently, is kind of smoked water that's sprayed onto the products. And they are now saying that this unique taste could be linked to even cancer or infertility. Oh, you just don't know anymore what's good or bad for you. It's always the things you like, isn't it, that comes with these warnings. Nothing better than a smoky rasher, or indeed a packet of smoky bacon crisps. Where are the other ones? Rancheros were another smoky-flavoured treat, weren't they? They're still around as well. And it is a week to the day And Super Value Porky Cueve opens its doors to the boss. And of course, there's still tickets available up in Kilkenny and the Belfast gigs and places like that. But the Cork gig is sold out. It's an excellent article in both the Examiner and the Independent today related to Bruce Springsteen. Just one thing, they're looking at a 4-star hotel in Cork City Centre on the night of the Bruce Springsteen gig, €460. It's the way things are now, you're almost half thinking that that's a bit of a deal, you know, because we're used to them being even higher than that. But anyway, the other article to do with it is the great Ralph Regal, the Irish Independent correspondent and writer, and he's here on Leaside. He's had a decades-long obsession with the boss. I've even spoke to him on the air about this the last time Springsteen was in town. And apparently it all started from some great photographs of him as well, many, many different Springsteen gigs all over the world. But it started back in Slane Castle in June of 1985. That was the very first one. He says, people have often asked me how many concerts I've attended, how many Springsteen concerts. And he says, I'm at the half century mark now, like 50. But he says, in fairness to him, that's far behind some Irish people or Italian or Spanish fans that I know who have rocked to the boss more than 100 times. But 50 ain't bad, Ralph. 50 ain't bad. And then as to how you find your entertainment, perhaps it's on Netflix, perhaps you've been watching Baby Reindeer. And of course, I'm not allowed to say anything at all about Baby Reindeer because I get all sorts of grief from people who say, ah, you're spoiling it, you're ruining it, I haven't watched it yet, or I've only been 2 or 3 episodes in. So I'll say nothing about that, except that there are a couple of stories related to it, because you will find that Fiona Harvey, be careful, I won't give anything away, is the real person who believes that she has been misrepresented in Baby Reindeer, right? So apparently there's going to be a bit of a showdown between herself and Piers Morgan on, because Piers Morgan's on YouTube now, on his television show tomorrow. It's already been recorded. It's the big TV interview. It's her first since the success of the show, and they figure, and she figures, and many figures, that the show is based on her and her interaction with Richard Gadd. Now, if you haven't seen Baby Reindeer, you haven't a clue what I'm talking about, so my apologies for that. But she says, because the show, the interview has been recorded already, she says, there's an emphasis from Piers Morgan with regards to the emails I'm supposed to have sent. He did the interview fast-paced, trying to catch me off guard. He kept on saying to me, are you sure you haven't sent this guy 41,000 emails and phone calls? So it's interesting, and perhaps you're going to watch Piers Morgan and the real-life Martha Scott on TV tomorrow night, certainly on YouTube. But I mention it because there has been some response to the fact that she is being interviewed, if the show was based on her. Like, here's one, for instance. It is nothing short of disgraceful. I'm utterly disgusted that we can now turn a criminal stalker into a celebrity. The world has lost the plot totally. Stop the ride. I want to get off. Flabbergasted that this is allowed to happen, that she's going to make money from what she did to someone. I can't read out the rest of these comments because it will be a spoiler for those of you who haven't watched the show. But anyway, it's happening tomorrow night. And of course, there's huge interest in Baby Reindeer. If I had my time over again, would I watch it? Yeah, probably. But, you know, it wouldn't be making the top 10. No, not anytime soon. Anyway, text 0868104106.
Call Neil now. 0818104106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Okay, calls in a couple of seconds' time, but I see a text already saying there's a crowd, did you know, going around already cutting down election posters, opposition against opposition. The posters are all over the place. I don't know whether people should be going on cutting them down. That's not fair. It's either they should be up or they shouldn't. And if they're up, everybody should be allowed to put them up. But as to whether or not there's a better way of doing it, I don't know. Maybe people like the colour. Anyway, here's an interesting one. And I was talking about in the papers there a second ago that there's a shortage of bus drivers and bus mechanics. And I'd love to hear from people. I never give out private and personal details, so you won't get into any grief with Bus Éireann if you get in touch with me, because I'll never give personal information to anybody. But what's it like as a bus driver? Why is there a shortage? One would have thought that would be a good steady job paying good money. Text 0868104106. But one bus driver did get in touch with me. No details been given. But this has to do with Cork being definitely the capital of the worst drivers in Ireland. Bus driver says to me, small example, I was coming down Maryborough Hill a few days, coming past Maryborough Woods Hotel, and a woman stopped in the middle of the road having a chat with someone she knew. 10 o'clock in the morning. Main road, busy road. My double-decker was about 80% full. I only just managed to stop in time. And when I had a go at her, she couldn't understand what she had done wrong. Sorry to say, but I find the elderly in Cork, as a bus driver, I find the elderly in Cork the most dangerous on the roads, as they make very dangerous decisions. They're unable to judge distances. She actually stopped on a bend in the road, so I only saw her as I went around the corner. In case anyone thought I was driving too close to her, I wasn't. That is quite alarming. You see it every day. I left here yesterday in Curraheen, went out at the University Business Park where this radio station is based, turned right, then up to the roundabout to take me onto the South Ring. What's coming down against me? A car with the driver's door wide open. Just literally wide open. Driving along, I was thinking, does this driver know that his or her car door is wide open and swinging in the wind? So I had to pull in, not much, just a little bit, so that the car door didn't bang off the side of my car. And they weren't doing 5 or 10 kilometres an hour. This was like, I don't know, 30 or 40 kilometres with the driver's door swinging in the wind. You couldn't make this up, lads. Text 086 8104 106. This came into my Instagram as opposed to an email, and some people from time to time do get in touch with me by Instagram. You can follow me on Instagram, particularly if you're interested in winning some Live the Marquee tickets and things like that. But she says to me, I'm writing to you so that it might help my husband to see sense. He's given up drink totally, even though he was never an alcoholic. He started off doing Dry January a while back. At the start, like most normal people, he couldn't wait for it to end, and he'd be looking forward to his first pint. Last year, he kept it going, though, until Easter, which was a bit annoying, but I still knew Easter was around the corner. Then this year, Easter came and went, and he said he's not drinking anymore, ever. No discussion with me. He just quit. We have holidays booked in June, and I'm dreading them. I'd cancel them now if I could. I think it's really unfair to take such a huge decision without even discussing it with me. The truth is, he's not as much fun without a couple of drinks. And I don't see why he had to stop in the first place. He never let himself down with drink. To be honest, it's the opposite. He's letting himself down now without it by being a bit boring and not as much fun. We used to have great chats after a few drinks. I find that quite interesting, that you couldn't have chat sober. We could discuss anything. That's all gone now. It's not just me who has said it, but we've been out with my family and a couple of friends, and they have noticed that he's not the ball of fun he used to be. He doesn't stay out as long either. If we're going back to friend's house after the pub, he just goes home. Imagine how embarrassing this is for me. I also feel when he comes back from his early Sunday morning cycle and I'm still in bed, he's actually judging me. He never says anything, but I can feel his judgment over my small bit of a hangover. I'm not expecting him to drink every night, but I feel one night a week would do him no harm. His selfishness is driving a huge wedge between us, and I'm dreading the holidays. Anyway, I'm hoping that people will be able to point out that marriage is about compromise. If you get to read this out or people talk about it, I can play the show back to him, and then we can perhaps move on. So anyway, we shared that then on our own social a couple of days back. Big response by text and call, so I'll get to text in a few minutes' time. Let me sit back, though, and not be in any way judgmental for now. But Andy, good morning.
Good morning, how are you?
Okay, so there's kind of a lot to unpick here. What are your thoughts?
I, out of all those messages of like 500 comments, and everybody was saying like, do the wrong thing and this, that and the other. And I just said, look, it's people's own choices at the end of the day, whether you drink or smoke. And I do believe you either kind of want to smoke or you want to drink. Now, he might be giving it up for a reason. He might want to save some money. He might want to do things with his life, do you know? Mm-hmm. And drinking has become expensive. Smoking has become expensive. It's not as easy anymore to go out and have a drink and have a smoke and have a party, do you know? I don't know how old these people are either. I don't know if they've got kids. I don't know how old she is.
Good point.
You know?
Yeah.
Everybody comes to some stage in their life where they go, okay, I've had enough of the drink now. I want to do something different with my life. And to say that you can't talk to your husband when he hasn't got a drink in him or have great chats is ridiculous, because you married the person. You must have married him for a reason, do you know? Not because he drinks every night of the week and has a laugh and a giggle, you know?
Yeah.
I just don't believe it to be true sometimes. Like, I don't drink every night. I might drink once or twice a year.
Does your partner, are you married?
I am married. I'm married actually 23 years coming this June.
Okay, well done. All right, so does your partner, your husband, drink?
He does, but only when he wants to. He might have one at the weekend if he wants to, you know?
But here,
we have drink at home.
Here's the thing, this husband, right? He started to do the dry January, and he, you know, fine, he did it for a while and then was looking forward to a drink then in February after dry January. And then he did it again, and it, you know, he probably liked, you know, the feeling. You know, he probably liked the change in life. He probably felt more energy. He probably just felt better in himself, and he did it for a little bit longer and longer, and then reached a point when he actually got to Easter one year, which was this year, and said, no, actually, you know what? I'm enjoying life better. I have more energy. I have more clarity of vision. I have no hangovers. You know, I have no fear of a morning. He just likes it better. And she feels he's not as much fun because of this without a couple of drinks. I mean, I would have thought that normally an awful lot of people would be given out to their partners for drinking too much, but not for not drinking at all.
I know you have all, like, I feel sorry for the people that have husbands that are never home because they drink every night and don't come home until the pub shuts, you know? And this person's husband is home, you know? Surely there's other things to do in life apart from drinking, you know? Life wouldn't be much fun if you just drank all the time. And maybe he's just finding a new leash of life.
Maybe does she perhaps drink too much, though, and feels guilty about her own drinking and is kind of envious or jealous of him stopping? I mean, I don't know how old they are, but, you know, going out to the pub, spending the whole night in a pub, then going back to somebody's house drinking, you're going to be a complete wreck the next day. He just doesn't want that anymore.
No, he doesn't want that. And he's probably getting older. Like, partying every weekend, you seem to get tired of it, you know, and you think there's more to life. So unless she's still in the party phase and he's coming out of it, do you know? So that's the other way to look at it, is she likes to party, she likes to drink, she likes the feeling, you know? Sometimes people don't like the feeling of after drink or being sick the next day.
Well, sometimes you can have a day written off. Sometimes it can be 2 days. I saw some video there recently from a person, I can't remember who it was, gave up alcohol because he felt that he was always borrowing from the next day. And sometimes he was borrowing a few hours from the next day, you know, the recovery. And sometimes it was so bad that he might have to borrow the next day entirely. And sometimes he was borrowing 2 days, which were a complete write-off. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And I've spoken to loads of people who are kind of around my age. And now I'm not that old. But they say, if I drink more than 6 or 7 pints, I could write the whole day off the next day. It's not like when you're in your 20s. Do you know, where you can drink and drink and drink. And then we used to wake up in the morning, catch the bus to work, and we were there. You know, it's one of those things that when you're 20s, you seem to be able to drink and get up the next morning and not lose a day. You could go to work. But as you get older, you seem to lose days.
You do, yeah, and it's natural. You change in that regard, or at least we're supposed to change in that regard. But she says that he's selfish. Is he in some way selfish that he's literally completely changing their social habits overnight without any conversation or taking into consideration her feelings?
I don't think he's being selfish. I just think he's growing up, by the sounds of it.
No, but all of a sudden, they're socializing and they're going out, and the things that she was looking forward to doing, and the crack, he's boring, he goes home early. He's seriously impacted on her socializing.
Yeah, and I suppose everybody can have fun without their partners being there. If you don't want to drink, you can go home. If you don't want to have that bit of fun, or maybe he thinks, I'm actually tired. I don't want to be doing this every weekend. I want to find something else to do. But they actually need to sit down together and find out what they actually like doing apart from drinking. There has to be some other compromise there, do you know? Like even going on holiday.
But he's not fun. She doesn't want to go on holidays with him because he's not going to be fun.
But then are you just going on holiday to drink all week or for 2 weeks, do you know? There's different things to do on holidays. There's different things to see. You eat out. You experience the cultures.
But if you marry, if you fall in love with someone, you fall in love with all of the person, right? So she clearly fell in love and married a man who liked his few drinks and liked to socialise and was a lot of crack and went away and had a good holiday and nice wine and beer or whatever the case may be. And that's what she signed up for. She's feeling cheated now that she's not getting that anymore.
Yeah. I understand where she's coming from, but I just feel like he obviously wants to do something different. He wants to feel different. But maybe sit down and talk. Life has come around and people text message more than they actually talk these days. Do you know, they don't sit down and actually talk to one another what's bothering them. Mm. Maybe he wants to experience something different and maybe he hasn't told his wife. Do you know? So they need to sit down and some...
He's up on the bike on a Sunday morning now, rather than nursing a sick head inside in bed.
Exactly. If he wants to go bike riding, let him go bike riding, do you know?
All right, okay.
It's one of those things.
Let me get some texts on this. Appreciate your contribution. Thank you so much. Have a good one. Text-wise, thank you, Andy. Text-wise, Sabrina says, first of all, what kind of a marriage can you truly have if you can only communicate after a few drinks? Secondly, he's made the best decision for him. You should be supporting him. He still goes out on nights out with you while you drink. How about some night where you don't drink and do something else that he might enjoy? It seems to be all about you. Honestly, I think he should leave you at home and go on holidays alone. Maybe she should leave him at home and go on holidays alone. So keep those coming. Hilda says, any woman, get a grip. Would you prefer if you and your children were going to Coonlea Refuge after every weekend, like so many women, due to alcohol addiction in their household? I wonder, will he put the same terms and conditions on you when you turn into the Antichrist over menopause and tell you to go sleep in the other bedroom because you're sweaty Betty beside him in the bed? I don't know how we got to that, but anyway, questions are there. Are there any mirrors in your house? Maybe you should take one good long look at your own situation. It's a sad complaint to have in this day and age. You need to do some soul searching. Sharina says, it's hard when someone changes and the other person remains the same. You're finding fault in him for moving forward and taking what he wants from his life. His change is a positive change. And as we age, we look for ways to enjoy our lives more. He seems to have found a way. I would encourage you to be proud of him rather than critical. Your situation could be a lot worse. Alcoholism is a much worse situation to be in, and you're not. I would be grateful for a husband like him. Me and my husband drink very little, and our weekends are full, and we feel amazing. Very much like I think your husband now feels. So maybe try it yourself and see how you might feel. Alan says, this proves that there's no pleasing some people. I can guarantee you, if he was fond of drinks, you'd be writing in complaining he's an alcoholic. Leave the man, do what he wants. If that means no alcohol, then so be it. You need to respect his decision, even if you don't agree with it. And there's loads more like that. And by and large, critical of the wife. Text 0868 104 106.
Call Neil now. 0818 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
David says, my father gave up smoking. His willpower was amazing because my mother kept on filling her mouth with one cigarette after another. If there was an award for chain smoking, she would have got it. Sadly, they have both left my life, and both from lung-related conditions. He went over 40 years without smoking and still ended up getting lung disease. My mother had lung cancer and smoked up to about a week before she passed away. I congratulate this guy, but he has to be very careful not to be pulled back in to the old habits. Fiona says, wow, maybe he would be more fun if the people around him were more accepting and not putting pressure on him to do things he clearly doesn't want to do anymore. I can't imagine it's a very fun night out with him, with all of the judging that's going on. Fornin says, letting himself down, he never let himself down, and he is now by not drinking. Is she for real? The fact that it took you both a feed of booze to discuss anything, or for you to find him in any way interesting or fun, speaks absolutely volumes in itself. I think there's only one person with a problem here, a narcissistic wife who's making all of this all about her. Oh, for the love of God, you poor woman, your husband gave up drinking. How very dare he? He still goes out with you and others. I don't see the problem here. He's obviously feeling the benefits and enjoying the benefits. I don't see why you're not supporting him. I don't drink and I still enjoy my weekends with my husband and friends and certainly don't need alcohol to do so. Yes, I did drink when I was younger and decided when I had kids I'd be better off without it. But it was my decision, nobody else's, and no discussion was ever needed. So there's a lot on this, actually. Just one more for now. I'll come back to more later. I honestly believe you are the problem. Says Amy, if you can only have a conversation with the other half with drink involved, that says a lot, doesn't it? You need to let this man be. You're almost forcing the drink down his throat. Why not support him? There's so many people who struggle with alcoholism on a daily basis, and we know nothing about it. But they do nonetheless. Thank God you don't have a partner who struggles with this, or you would sound, or you perhaps would be thinking completely different. You need to grow up. More texts, keep them coming. Text 0868 104 106. Pick up the phone on 0818 104 106. Can I just go back to something that I mentioned earlier on this morning, and that is a shortage of bus drivers and bus mechanics, particularly in Cork. Mossy, good morning.
Good morning, Hanil. How are you?
I'll talk to you about that in a second, but Danny, I know you also have a thought on the chap who gave up the drink and the wife is freaking out.
Yes, I do, yeah. I think he's quite entitled to do that. I can quite understand, we said, the less hangovers you'd want next morning getting up. And especially now, like when driving is an issue, you know, you need to be a full day off before you go driving next day.
Yeah.
And, you know, he has to look after himself as well. Like, it's quite possible that she has an issue with the drink. She'd want to be checking herself out, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. A lot of her conversations that I'm getting from the Instagram that she sent to me seem to be conversations about socializing and drink. That, you know, it's going out with the friends and drinking, going back to people's homes and drinking, going on holidays and drinking. You know, it seems to be a routine that she seems to be very happy with. Whereas he's obviously tired of that life. He clearly is, like, if he's up on the bike or something.
And, you know, you would get tired of it, you know. Like, I'm a cyclist myself. I like go for a cycle on Sunday morning, have a clear head, and doesn't feel nothing better. But I think she should understand his feelings. She should accept the way he feels. And she should try for a change rather than putting all the onus on herself, like, that she's missed out.
But here's the thing, right? He goes home early. They go out with friends, and even the friends are saying he's no fun. He's boring. She doesn't want to be with a boring person who doesn't want to have a bit of crack, doesn't want to have a couple of drinks, doesn't want to let his hair down, and goes home early.
Yes, I can quite understand that, because if I had a couple of drinks myself, like, I'd be a good man to sing an old song and have a bit of crack and bit of fun.
Yeah.
And if I didn't have it then, I would be quite boring. I can truthfully say that.
Yeah.
That I would just sit down and I'd like to go home early and just have a cup of tea and just go away from it, you know? So initially, there was two sides to look at it, really, I suppose.
Should he have sat down and had a chat about it first and said, listen, I'm thinking of doing this. I did Dry January, now I've gone to Easter. And you know something? I actually like life better without it. What do you think? He didn't...
Yes, yeah. And if he asked her even, you know, would you like to try it with me?
Well, good point.
You know?
Yeah.
If he sat down and asked her, would you like to try it with me and we'll do it together? You know, and it might work out to their advantage. They might find more opportunity, more exciting things out in the world rather than going to other people's houses. You might be able to go for a walk someplace.
You get fed up of raging hangovers, wouldn't you? You just get fed up.
Oh my God, you would. Oh God, it's not something. You would always wake up in the morning sometimes and you call yourself so many names in the morning, you know, a pure fool, why didn't I come home, you know, why didn't I do this, why didn't I do that?
That's the day written off now, yeah, absolutely. I'm never doing it again.
Your day is gone, like, and it affects everything in your day.
Your day is gone for sure, and then you promise you're never going to do it again. By Wednesday when you're feeling good again, it's all the repeat performance all over again.
It's all the repeat performance.
He's fed up with that, yeah.
Yes, and it's so repetitive. And I can see where he's coming from. He's so fed up of it, you know. And I can quite understand both sides.
Yeah, well, can you understand a wife that would say, He's selfish, and his selfishness is driving a huge wedge between us. I'm dreading on going on holidays. Like, how could you dread going on holidays with somebody just because they don't drink?
I think I have to commend him for going on holidays, that he don't drink and enjoy the scenery. And if she's going for that, for the drink only, it looks as if she is, like, okay, she has a problem herself.
It takes a lot of courage for somebody to do what he's done, I think.
I think so. I commend him for doing it. I think he's a brilliant man for doing it and to come out and say it. And she's really wanting to take stock of herself as well.
Okay. Now, I got more calls on this, which I'll come back to, but hold on to John there for a second, lads. But just on the shortage of bus drivers on Lee side, are you a bus driver, Mossy?
No, I'm not. I'm a 60-year-old postman, but I never upgraded my license. So, like, if I needed to upgrade my license now to get a bus license, I just have the ordinary van license, I would say, car, B license. And to cost me the bones of 2,000 to 3,000 euros.
Why?
Because you have to do your lessons, which will cost about 200 or 300 euros at a time. You have to go away. If you don't pass on the day, the bus will cost you to rent out for 350 euros.
Yeah, but if all I wanted to be I know that if you were doing it privately yourself, but if I wanted to be a bus driver in the morning, I'd apply to Bus Éireann. And they'd help me to get all of those licenses and pass the tests, wouldn't they? Or do I have to have it before they give me the job?
I think you have to have it before they give you the job. I don't think, unless nowadays, I know you're saying that there was shortages, but it didn't stay to say that they would give you the help that's needed.
Okay, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you have to. What is the license for driving a bus? What is it? Special license, is it? Because it's big.
A special license. Yeah, you'll be D and a D1. You've to upgrade. You can go to the 16 seater, or then you go up to the 52 seater. But they always tell you go up to the 52.
No, oh, okay. I always thought that Bus Éireann would train you as a bus driver.
Unless now, I don't know that. I can't be certain of that. But when I just heard that, I said, like, I was trying. You know, when you retire from on post or leave early, like, you do the private buses there or the school runs, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And you need all these little things. Like, but the cost to me, as if I had to get it, cost me about 2,000, I was told, 2.5 to 3.
But if you are in receipt of social welfare, you're saying you wouldn't pay for it?
I wouldn't. Well, I have friends of mine that did it, they packed up their job. And when they went down the system, the way you're going to force or choose, whatever it is, you're given all these things. You get all these tickets, you get Safe Pass course, you come along, you get forklift course, driving license, you want to be the bus driver, you get all these things done.
If you're not
my
working.
My point being at the end of the day is, like, the working man is always in trouble, you know what I mean? I'm not saying they're not bad drivers, but the best of drivers are out there walking day in, day out.
Okay. Just a final one. Do you think Bus Éireann would actually hire a 60-year-old man?
Well, it would be totally indiscretion. I don't think why shouldn't they?
I know, but they should, but I'm asking, would they? Are they interested somebody?
I would be interested to know, like, would they do it, you know?
Okay.
But, like, you know, from men around 60, like, you know, I have plenty of experience as such, like, you know. And, like, there's a lot of other people, men and women out there, have a lot of experience. But I maintain it's just the cost. Unless Bus Éireann will come out and say, look, we are going to do it for you.
Okay, undoubtedly somebody will fill me in on that. Thank you for that, Mossy. Take care. Text 0868104106. John, good morning.
Good morning, Neil.
Thanks for holding. Your thoughts on all of this?
Well, now, first of all, about the bus drivers. As far as I know, there's a 3-week training course at the Capwell the Capwell Depot. I was speaking to a bus driver recently, and he said there's a 3-week training course, and I'm sure Bus Éireann look after all the other things, you know, provided you're suitably qualified. I just know
that years ago there was never any kind of shortage of bus drivers or mechanics to service buses.
Management, if you have bad managers who are very poor people skills, you're going to get a lot of trouble and dissatisfaction.
Well, true enough.
It depends.
I'm thinking as well that, you know, a job with a big bus stuck in traffic all day and surrounded by irate, angry motorists and drivers.
It must be desperate, yeah.
Mightn't be an attraction.
The driver's virtually in solitary confinement. He's inside in a small cabin. And I don't know how they negotiate the twists and bends and the narrow streets and the traffic. I think they're amazing.
It's just that the announcement this morning says they need an extra 2,000 bus drivers to meet the demand over the next 3 years. And they're asking people not to drive cars and to leave them at home and take buses, yeah. And yet they can't find anybody to drive the buses. But anyway.
Well, you should get on to Bus Éireann and get them on the radio there and put these questions to them, you know.
Well, I mean, it's Bus Éireann are saying it, that they need 2,000 drivers.
Oh, I know, yeah. But I mean, to come on and explain why they're saying this and what the problem is, you know. But listen, as regards that woman and her husband, I think the response has been very critical and a bit judgmental and severe on the wife, and I'll tell you why. Imagine a happily married couple and suddenly one of them decides, I'm going to go vegan. Now, the other partner has no intention of going vegan, but you can understand the guilt that they feel because they're still eating meat when the partner has given it all up. I think that's at the nub of it. It's the guilt she feels because she's not going off to drink.
Well, that's interesting.
She's continuing to drink, and she may feel guilty. You know, I don't know, but that's what I feel.
Yeah, yeah.
But listen,
how would it work in a house where somebody goes vegan? There'd be a bit of chaos there, wouldn't there?
Not, no. I don't just need to follow your own thing. I've a nephew, and he's vegan,
and his wife. Yeah.
And his wife is the daughter of a dairy farmer.
But how does it actually work when, say, the vegan is preparing his or her meals, and the person who's having a steak is preparing his or her to sit down and eat at the same time, with regards to say cross contamination or?
They just cook everything, like, and you take what you want and I take what I want. I suppose, I don't know. It is a bit tricky, all right, I agree. And I suppose, you know, inevitably there's, I won't say tension, but at the same
time... If that were to happen the meat eater or the carnivore is always going to feel judged by the vegan, that they're,
That's what I'm saying about the woman. She feels judged now by the husband. Because she's still drinking and he's not. That's my point.
Okay, good one. Appreciate it.
But listen, before you go, do you remember that woman that was complaining about her dog getting her hair cut?
Yeah.
It cost so much at Peter Mark. Do you remember that?
I do. I have more text on that.
She'd like to go out to Mick Moriarty, the baldy barber. I'm sure he'd have done a nice job.
I don't think the bald one does women's or girls' hair. It could be open to question.
Look, it's only a child. I'm sure he would have obliged her.
Okay, good points. Well made. Just on that, actually, listen to the people complaining about the cost of a haircut. Listen, these people have to pay staff and overheads and business rates. It's €20 for a man's bazaar nowadays with no water, no heat or shampoo or oils on the head. Women's is totally different. It's Peter Marks, so you know what to expect of them. Hairdressers with big names can be ridiculously priced, but saying that, hairdressers in general, most of them are too expensive. It's actually a luxury now to go out and get your hair done. And then on the wife whose husband has given up the drink, Robert says, I could go 10 years without a drink and it wouldn't bother me. I like to drink a bit at occasions, but apart from that, I wouldn't touch it. I focus on hard work, providing for my family and having a good relationship. People don't need drink to have fun. That only comes down to personality and character. If this person said they only had good chats after drink, well, she did, and now it's boring that he doesn't drink anymore, it sounds like a dry, miserable relationship then. You shouldn't need drink to have good chats about anything. You shouldn't need drink to have the crack. Looks like someone needs a reality check. Drink isn't everything. And this is coming from a 26-year-old. Some people are just embarrassing. in the way they look at life. Okay, thank you for that. It's in 2 points on this, actually. One is that I don't know the age of the couple, and secondly, I don't know whether or not they have any children. Maybe you feel that that doesn't actually have any relevance with regards to the conversation or the predicament they find themselves in, but I think it does, because as you get older, you change, or at least your support supposed to. And the things you did in your 20s, you're really... You know, shouldn't be doing them in your 40s or 50s or 60s, or doing them less anyway, or in a more controlled way. Sometimes that penny doesn't drop until it's too late, unfortunately. Back after 10, text 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
I'm wondering, actually, the more you think about the husband who's no crack since he gave up the drinking, whether or not his wife needs drink in a social setting for confidence and wouldn't have the confidence otherwise. And if that's the case, why is it like that? Well, you have other societies, say, for instance, that don't drink. You could have people who would be, say, Muslim, that would have no problem going to a party and dancing the night. I saw it, actually. It was at a wedding in Turkey. And it was an amazing thing to watch. And people, I mean, maybe it's just our backgrounds are different, but you could have, you know, entire events that would be just soft drinks or Cokes or minerals or orange juice or whatever. But it was never, it just was not in any way, shape or form impeding in any way on the fun. So maybe it's just our rearing or our DNA or in our genes, or maybe she just needs it for confidence and is judging him because he can find a better way. Text 0868 104 106 on that one as I go back to the phone lines. Talking about giving things up, actually. Andrew, good morning.
Hi, Neil. How are you?
I'm good. So it's not unrelated, really, on giving things up, except you did it as a couple and it wasn't drink.
No, it was meat. I just heard your last caller there a minute ago.
He was making the point, interestingly, like that if I'm a meat eater and my partner is a carnivore as well, and then one of us decides to go vegan, that's selfish.
Yeah, I get his point. But I suppose for us, it was just it kind of turned into a New Year's resolution kind of thing, and I suppose we realised after giving it up, geez, we never really liked it in the first place.
Okay, why did you make a New Year resolution like that? We make New Year's resolutions about not drinking or giving up fags or
chocolate things.
Yeah, but why did you even have that conversation?
It's a couple of years ago now. I can't remember, to be honest. But we kind of, you know, I suppose our kids love meat, so it was a bit tricky to kind of change it. But We love eating fish and different kind of more healthy kind of Mediterranean diets sort of thing.
So it wasn't anything to do with animal cruelty or climate awareness or anything like that?
There is a bit of that, you know, of course. Obviously, that's all a consideration. But I suppose we just didn't like it. You know, we don't like red meat and steaks and pork and... just prefer kind of vegetarian fish, lots of fish. You know, it's a health more than anything else.
Mm. Not a good protein in a good steak, though.
Yeah. So finding that and, you know, your vitamin B, iron, that kind of stuff can be tricky. So we grow a lot of our own vegetables now, and spinach and kale and that kind of, you know, leafy green kind of stuff.
Okay, so you were never a huge fan of a steak or, you know, maybe Irish in the first place, no, or a spaghetti bolognese or a chili con carne. No, you just weren't into it anyway.
Not really, no. And, you know, we kind of make vegetarian versions of all that kind of stuff now. So it's a nice change.
And how does it work then if you're cooking for the ravenous carnivore children?
I still have to cook the fry up and the steak and the pork chops and all the stuff, but I just don't eat it myself.
Even when you're getting the wafting flavours coming off it, no?
Yeah, especially this time of year now when it's on the barbecue and you get the nice smoky flavour off it, but it can be tempting. But
so what do you instead then, Andrew?
Fish, like this time of year now, a bit of stuffed sea bass or something on the barbecue would be really nice, or bream. You know, even a bit of salmon, nice crispy skin on the barbecue.
I love all of that myself as well. I really do.
Yeah.
So you don't miss anything then, no?
No, not at all. Not at all.
And would it have worked if only one of you decided to give up?
probably not. I'd be cooking three or four different dinners then every night, I suppose.
Okay. All right. So a lot busier then in the cooking department because everybody's got different food needs. Some of you, vegetarian. So you're vegetarian as opposed to, is the next step vegan now, do you think?
No, I don't think so. Like, we love fish and seafood and cheese. I could never give up cheese. So vegan is definitely not on the priority list. But,
okay. And is your wife as committed to remaining off it as you seem to be?
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Fair play. All right, nice one. Appreciate that. Text 0868104106. Better still, pick up the phone on 0818104106. Best calls across the week, of course, tickets for Live at the Marquee. Husband giving up the drink, that man gave up alcohol, needs to give up the wife next, says Carol and Douglas. When you have a life partner, there's a change in our social habits. It's difficult, but because this change is a positive change, then all it shows is that the problem lies not with him, but with his lady, says Maria. I'm currently in recovery, Neil, and I haven't drank in almost 14 months. My life revolved around drink, as that was how my head was programmed. My wife drank very little, but I drank every chance I got. From going to numerous AA meetings every week, that woman sounds like a lot of people in AA rooms, and her life cannot be complete without alcohol, which is one of the signs of alcoholism. Since I gave up drink, my wife now feels like she doesn't have to drink anymore. Our life together has become so much better since alcohol is not a part of it. Maybe if the wife tried giving up the drink with him, she will see that life can get so much better. I thought that life without alcohol would be boring too, but I was very, very wrong. Please keep my details private. I certainly will. And I wish you all the best of luck in your journey. Well done to that guy for giving up the drink and thinking about his health. She would want to take a look at herself. She can't have a relationship without drink. Come on. That's very sad. Women are desperate drinkers. I've seen it too many times. Really? I wonder what you mean by desperate drinkers. I wouldn't have thought it would have been a sex issue. Kathleen says, I'd say fair play to him. There's probably a lot of people wishing it was their own situation with all the problems that drink is causing. My husband Neil stopped drinking 25 years ago. We have wonderful holidays, and if you love someone, you won't find them boring, as she seems to do. You support them, and you look at different ways to enjoy life. My life has flourished as I have my children since I hope that couple finds a happy medium. And just one final one ahead of the break. I'm currently in recovery. Pardon me, this one came in twice, so I'll leave it at that. Keep them coming. Text 0868104106. We've got calls on the way.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868104106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Maybe a life decision like this should be made with the thought of your partner in mind. Let's think about that. Maybe he should not just decide, oh, I'm doing this. It may impact on you. I don't care. I'm just changing. I'm just going to drive on, give up drink, get up on the bike and have a clear head and live my life healthier. Not really interested in what you're going to do with your life. Maybe she feels that that's not something that she signed up to. Text 0868104106. Back to the phone lines we go. Paul, good morning.
Morning, Neil. How are we?
I'm good. It'd be interesting getting your perspective on it you're talking about going out to all-nighters at one stage in your life, although they were ones without any alcohol. Is that right?
That was it. Like back in the 1980s with the whole kind of modern skinhead scene, like you'd go to all-nighters and there would never be any drink available there whatsoever.
What's an all-nighter though?
An all-nighter, it would start around 8 o'clock and it would go until 8 o'clock in the morning and it would just be no control. It could be a bit of Tamla Motown, Stax, Reggae, Ska. There'd be no alcohol. It would just be water, soft drinks. And you'd dance the whole night away. You wouldn't need the drink. You just get caught up in the music and away go, and the dance floor would be packed all night, like.
Yeah. Just bottled water or Coke or whatever the case may
be. Yeah, it's just a shame that nowadays people seem to need to be full of drink or whatever else they're taking just to have a good time, like, you know?
What was the age profile for that then?
I'm 58 now. In my head, I'm 21, but I'm 58. But I can't do it. Like, I can go out and have 3 or 4 pints, and I would feel it in the morning. Like, and to me, it's a waste. But even on holidays, we'd go out, have a few sociable drinks with a meal or whatever. Like, you know, you might have a nightcap back at the hotel, and that's it then. Just, to me, to get up in the morning and you're dying sick, it's a waste. Complete waste of a day. Like.
Yeah, if you look at the era of, say, people when they're in their 20s, right? Okay, there were hangovers, for sure there were. But you shook him off much faster, right? Your recovery much faster, right?
That's it. And plus, back in the day, you were going to these events on your scooter or in a car or whatever, and then you then got to drive home in the morning. And it just wasn't worth the risk driving home full of drink, dying sick or whatever. Do you know, so you didn't do it. You didn't need it, really. Like.
But as the decades go on then, isn't it a case that we are supposed to kind of change in that regard? And that our interests must become more diverse or varied?
They do. As you get older, you get a bit more sense and you realise that you don't always really need to be full of thick and drink to have a good time. And as you say then, it's getting up that next day and you're saying, my God, like, I don't want to do anything today. It's a complete waste. And as you're getting older, I mean, I'm 58 now, like, every day to me is a bonus. Do you know what I mean? I don't want to waste it laying in bed all day. So yeah, you do.
So much of what she's talking about actually would show that maybe her life or her occasions or the things that she does must evolve around drink. And by him stopping, he's threatening her lifestyle.
Yeah, I think she has the problem. Like, you know, he seems to have grown up and coughed himself on. Like, if she needs to go out and get blatted every night, just have a good time. Like, then that's quite sad. Like, there isn't much for a.
Well, she doesn't go. And she's not saying that. Like, he's not going that far, saying that he has to go out like she does. She doesn't say both of them get absolutely polluted.
But she's kind of saying he's boring because he doesn't drink. Like, you know,
she said the chats are gone without the drink. The social occasions are boring. Even the friends are saying it. He goes home early when she wants to stay out later. Let's think about this. He is not the man she married.
Yeah, but then none of us are really. Like, I mean, I was a mad young fellow when I was years ago. My wife would have been the same. We all were, like. But as you get older, do you know what I mean? You kind of cop yourself on. I mean, he can still go out and drink 0.0 Heineken for the night. It looks like he's having a pint. No one's going to know any different.
Nah, she'll know because he's boring. She'll know because he's boring and he's no crack. He's sober.
Yeah, well, that to me is quite sad. Like, I think she's got a bit of a problem there. Like, you know, maybe pop a small bit, like, cop yourself on. You know, you don't need drink to have a good time. Not because you don't drink; it doesn't make you boring. Like, you know,
It's kind of maybe. I was chatting with the chap there a while ago. Himself and his wife give up the meat, and they just didn't want it anymore. And they eat a Mediterranean diet. They eat lots of fish and fresh veg and things like that. That reminds me of the whole Mediterranean way of life or their relationship with alcohol. Whereas maybe the Irish. And maybe the English or the Scottish or the Welsh, that we have a more dangerous relationship with it than maybe our.
It is. It kind of goes hand in hand with the social life, really, doesn't it? If you kind of go out and you don't drink, you're seen as a bit of a pariah, or you're seen as being boring or what have you. Like, whereas to the Mediterraneans, they can have a glass of wine at lunchtime and a glass of wine or two in the evening, and they're okay with that, like, you know. Whereas, as you say, with the rest of us, we kind of. One or two really isn't enough, is it? Got to keep going on and on and on. And when do you stop, like, you know?
Yeah.
That's my point, like, you know? We all eventually have to cop ourselves on and say, look, enough is enough. Like, I can go out with my wife and just have one or two drinks. I don't think I'm boring. I don't think she's boring. We have a nice night out, get up in the morning and go to work or whatever, like, or spend the day doing whatever you want to do, and you're not dying sick, and you're not, you know.
She's dreading the holidays. And just on a final point here, do you think at some stage that the penny will drop with her? It just happened to have dropped faster with the husband.
Yeah, I don't know. People like that, does it drop, though? Do you know what I mean? You know? If she thinks he's boring now, like, you know, when, if she wants to go on holiday on her own and go drinking every night, away you go. Like I go away with my buddies. We go fishing or we go off to Salou or whatever, like, do you know what I mean? And that's a different type of holiday. I would have a few drinks with the lads in, and I'm dying sick the next day. Well, I'm dying sick usually for a week because I can't deal with the hangovers. But that's a different holiday. But when I go with my wife, we do things differently. We go out, we have a few drinks, we have a nice meal, we're up in the morning early, beach and what have you. So, you know, you just kind of adapt as you go along, like, you know. But if she thinks he's boring, I think maybe she's got the issues, not him. I think he's dead right. Like, obviously, he's made a decision.
Nice one.
You know, that he doesn't want to, you know, carry on drinking. He doesn't need drink to have a good time. So, as I say, I think maybe she's got the issues, not him.
Okay, look after yourself. Thanks, Paul. Text 0868104106. I've just finished, just on that point, actually, with regards to the Irish, or indeed, I suppose, the English, or maybe the Scottish, or the Welsh as well. It's an interesting book that I just finished recently. It was written way back in 1903. It was written by an American journalist called Jack London, who came, great name, incidentally, Jack London. He came over to England, and the gist of it, the book is called People of the Abyss. It was a very, very popular book, and it's still in print, actually, all these years later. But he came over from America. And he was an affluent guy. He wasn't short of money or anything like that. He was very successful and, you know, and fairly well healed. But in his time over in London, particularly in the East End of London, he saw shock and poverty, right? Absolutely shock and poverty. Really and truly, like over 50, maybe 60% of the children were dying within the first 2 or 3 years of birth. And, you know, families were living in one-room hovels, and the rent was high and the wages were shocking. And there was many people coming in from all over Europe to settle in London and try and get a job there and rear a family there, and that drove the wages even lower. It's called People of the Abyss. But he was talking about all of the different people who were trying to help, you know, to drag people out of poverty, and the fact that everybody was drinking, and men drank and women drank and children were around all of the alcohol. And much of it, he was saying in the book, actually at one stage, he decided to become a person of the abyss himself. So he went out and he bought secondhand, dirty, filthy clothes. He gave up the life he was living. He told all his friends he was going to do this, and he lived as a very, very, very poor person in the East End for a number of months, and he stayed in the slums and the doss houses, and he went into the workhouses, and he stayed there, and he did the work, and he slept on the streets in the winter and everything. It was a fascinating book, and I'm only mentioning it now because it kind of relates to, you know, where we're at now, maybe with regards to our relationship with, say, alcohol. And it is getting better with younger people, don't get me wrong. I understand that we've got a bigger problem now with other types of addictions, but alcohol is still the main one, and Coonvera will tell you that the main reason that people are going into rehab, of course there are other reasons, but the main reason is alcohol. But he was saying that there was pubs everywhere, and this is the East End of London just to the turn of the century, you know, 1880 to maybe 1910, 15 or whatever particularly. And he was saying there was pubs everywhere, and the poor people spent most of their time, if they weren't working for pennies or shillings, in the pubs, because their home life was shocking. And they were in these little one-room hovels rearing children, and they slept and they ate and they washed. They had no bathroom facilities, so they didn't want to stay in these rooms. They didn't want to be in there, so they found an awful lot more release. I'm just thinking off the top of my head, and they found a better life in the pub, where at least by drinking they could be somebody that they really weren't. They could be the better version of themselves, the drunker, happier, more carefree person. Well, all of the charities and politicians were shouting at them, you need to be thrifty, you need to work hard, you need to have a better lifestyle, you need to cop yourself on. But they couldn't cop themselves on, because the world that they were living in was awful, and the escape from it was drink, which was very, very cheap and very, very potent back then, and led to all sorts of complications. And of course, the children saw all of this at a very young age, and they themselves became, all obviously, people of the abyss themselves. It's an amazing book. I pass it on for what it's worth. Jack London's People of the Abyss. I don't think you'll get it in a bookshop now, but you certainly will get it online and on Amazon and places like that. Call's on the way.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
So my point being, I suppose, that maybe there are too many of us in society who need alcohol to, you know, I guess, to function, could well be descendants of people of the abyss. Keep them coming. Text 0868104106. On the bus Erin shortages from earlier on, this is interesting. Bus Erin are not the only ones with staff shortages. If your post person goes sick or suffers a bereavement, the chances are your mail will not move for a week, just like out in a certain area that I live in. Another person then talking about driving for Bus Erin, the reason drivers are leaving is because of poor pay. There is a 7-year pay scale that was voted against by members, but the company went ahead with it. You don't get paid overtime. Constantly late for breaks and constantly late finishing a shift. Buses that should not be on the road have broken seats that a driver has to sit in for hours. I've often come off the bus in pain and been in pain while driving over the state of the seat alone. We get 20 days holidays and we can't pick when we take them. You get 5 days between January and May, And then you have 10 days between May and September and another 5 days from October to December. How is a family man with kids meant to take summer holidays in May or September? Then to top it all off, the NBRU, the union, one of the unions in-house, are no help whatsoever. A union is there for the workers, not to be in bed with the company. Last Friday, I was so very close to packing in the job, and the times we have in the route are a complete joke to work. We can't make the times, but the company just doesn't care. There could be some of the reasons why. One final one. As far as I know, you need a learner permit category D if you want to drive a bus. Bus Éireann will then do the rest for you. As in, if you present for the job and they need 2,500 drivers, you need to have the learner permit category D. They'll train you with the rest of them. Anyway, keep them coming. Text 0868 104 106. Let me just stay with the Bus Éireann topic for now, if you don't mind. Tony, good morning.
Hey, how are we doing?
Good. And you have O'Driscoll's Transport in Glanmire. Your thoughts?
I was just listening there about the buses and all that. Look, there are a couple of different... We are in dire straits at the minute. Not just myself, or the haulage industry, right? I'm involved in the Irish Rural Haulage Association, and we're constantly meeting and trying to put stuff together on it, okay? Now, I suppose the most important thing, we have two major issues here on our side of it, right? And again, you can actually take in the buses. As far as I'm aware, with the buses, you have to be 21 before you can drive a bus, right? What they need to do is bring the age back, bring it back to 18 years of age. You can obtain a truck license, an articulated truck license at 18 years of age, but the problem is you find it very difficult to get insurance, right? Now, the amazing thing about this is an agricultural contractor or a farmer out there can put a big tractor on the road with a big trailer behind it, and he can put a 16-year-old into it. And once the tractor is insured, the 16-year-old can drive it. Now,
So a 16-year-old can drive a tractor pulling a huge, big load on a main road?
A load, they can put whatever they want up in the back of the tractor on the main road, right? At 16 years of age. Now, you have to be 17 or 18 before you can get a truck license, okay? Now, the problem is, I put a 22-year-old on my insurance. All haulers, their insurance is anyone over 25 with a full license. You don't have to name them. Okay? But yeah. Anyone under 25, you must name them. You must also produce a copy of their license to the insurers. Now, you don't have to do that when you're running a tractor. So, right,
there's a big difference now between a tractor and a big, huge Arctic with a massive container
on it. There is no difference, Neil, I assure you. I transport machinery up to 26 tonne in the back of my truck, and there are tractors and trailers going around with the same weight, the same load, the same everything, with a 16, 17, 18-year-old driving it.
Mm.
That does not have to produce their license.
Doesn't have the same power, though, the tractor.
It's very same power. Well, I wouldn't have the same power, wouldn't have the same speed, but it's irrelevant. It still carries the same load. But getting back to the original conversation, drivers, right? The Irish Road Haulage Association worked there with the ETB, and they put different courses together there for people to try and take up driving as a profession, okay? Now, it needs to be pushed more in the schools, because there are guys and girls finishing up secondary school. They don't want to go to third level of education. So if it's promoted more in the second level education, to go and avail of these apprenticeships. They're actually apprenticeships. That's what they are now. Avail of these apprenticeships and get their licences. But then on the other hand, as I said, we need to be able to get insurance for these.
I know that. But now I know all of the reasons now, because a driver just told me in a text with regards to the state of the buses. There are buses that shouldn't be on the road. The seats that they're sitting in are crocs. They're living with pain all of the time. The hours are long. They can't make the route times, but the management keep on cracking the whip. Their holiday arrangements are shocking. There's just better work out there.
Well, that is the point, yeah. There is better work out there. But if you don't get these guys into these jobs at 18 years of age, you have no where you're going to get them in at 21 years of age in a bus and 18 in the truck. Like, once the insurance is over 25, you cannot get them insured.
Yeah, but
unless they're over 25.
I think younger people now have their sights set on other career paths, to be honest with you. Where they can call the shots themselves, they can set their own times. They're cracking the whip now. I mean, Bus Éireann has 3,000 employees from 51 different countries all over the world, and still they can't get enough bus drivers.
Yeah. Well, the question to be asked there is, right, there was a guy on there a while ago criticising a bus. Maybe he's right, maybe he's wrong, I don't know, right? But the question to be asked is,
how many people are quite happy in their job? The majority of people are very happy in their do. Like, I'm in the haulage industry and have been in it with years, and I'm quite happy with it. I have drivers with me and they're quite happy. Yeah, drivers do tend to move around. There's no doubt.
Yeah, but young people, say in their 20s, wouldn't necessarily want to be driving involved in haulage where they're away from home an awful lot. It's hard work. They're driving constantly. They're on deadlines. You know, they're... you know, I don't know what the rates or pay are like, but, you know, they're out in all sorts of weather.
Well,
they're dealing with
people. I'll put it this way, a driver can take home for 50 hours a week from once he gets into the truck in the evening, at morning until he gets out of the truck in the evening. A driver can take home something in the region of €1,000 a week. Take home
after tax?
After tax, a driver can take home, provided he's willing to get up and walk with his employer.
Yeah, I mean, asking them to go to work and do his shifts
and
or her
do
shifts.
The job,
yeah.
Right? But when you've got guys criticise the equipment and stuff, then all these buses, all these trucks, they're all MOT tested every year and CBRT tested every year. So they can't be in that kind of bad condition. They
but
cannot.
He said they that's are. He said,
that's his opinion.
Yeah, well,
that's his opinion.
No, well, I'm taking him as face value like I'm taking you as face value. The unions are useless, they're saying. The holiday arrangements are shocking for a man with children. The buses that are on the road shouldn't be on the road, and they shouldn't be sitting in broken seats for hours on end and finishing and living with back pain. Come on.
Well, it's very easy to explain this one. We must do what we call 12-week checks, which we all have to log and we all have to report back. We have we get inspections by the RSA. We get inspections for our maintenance records, right? That's one individual condemning his job, right?
No, you're not driving a bus. No disrespect, Tony. You're a haulier. You're driving big Arctics and trucks that you look after. He's talking about Bus Air and not looking after their staff, nor looking after
buses are maintained in the same way as trucks.
But they can't get mechanics, so how are they maintaining them?
Okay, I suppose, right. There are very valid points. Where's this country going is the question we must ask. Where's this country going? If you don't have the trucks, you can't move the goods. If you don't have the bus drivers, you can't move the people. We have the government pushing there on using public transport. So where is this country going to end up if people go around with the attitude that there's easier jobs out there, which there is, there's no doubt there is. But this country is going to grind to a halt until such time as...
If you've got 95% of the public are young people going to college and college-educated, they don't want jobs like that anymore.
Okay, so can we answer my question, where are we going to get drivers?
Well, they're certainly doing their best to get them from overseas if we've 51 different nationalities of drivers. I don't know.
Yeah, where's our next problem, Neil? Where's the problem then after that? The problem is, where are we going to accommodate them? I know there are work going on at the moment in bringing in Georgian drivers, right? They have all the qualifications of the whole thing. The biggest issue we have at the moment with doing that is accommodation.
Okay, I agree with that. Well, could I ask you one final question, because I need to clip along here, but why are there so few mechanics now? Are people not going into the trade?
I don't know about the mechanics. I don't know why they're not going into the trade, right? But again, yeah, you hit the nail head well ago. There are easier jobs out there. But the question to be asked is, where is this country going to go when it's going to grind our heart when we can transport people and we can transport goods?
If you were the driver and you asked the driver to do overtime, would you pay the driver for overtime?
Of course I'd pay the driver.
Well, what this bus driver says, you don't get paid overtime. You're constantly late for breaks. You're constantly finishing late. You don't get paid. It's not their fault that the traffic is
going to happen. Well, I'm sure there are plenty bus operators out there that would appreciate that driver.
In the private sector?
In any sector.
Okay. No,
yeah,
I'm just...
That bus driver can drive a truck because his license will allow him to do it. If he can do my work, I have no problem in employing him. If he can do my work.
So if that guy who texted, and I'm assuming, because there are female bus drivers, I've seen them. Yeah. I don't know how many female Arctic drivers are. Do you know? Is there many?
I had one with me for a good number of years, and she was absolutely outstanding, loading and unloading machinery and chaining it down.
Right, hard work, fair play. Okay, well, I don't know what he's going to do next, but you're saying that if he's unhappy there and he can He's got all of the license and qualifications. His terms and conditions with, say, for a transport company.
If he's not happy with his terms and conditions, there are lots of Polish contractors out there that have extremely good terms and conditions. Come and drive for us. Come and drive for us. But don't be going around criticising people's equipment when it's been MOT tested and every 12-week checks and all that.
But no, in fairness now, I'm taking him at face value just as much as I am taking you at face value. He's saying it as he sees it, like.
Yeah. Oh. You know, so like, I mean, at the end of the day, there are good jobs out there. There are very good employers out there at the moment. But again, as I said, we'll go back. You need to get the 18-year-olds insured to get them onto the buses and get them onto the trucks.
Much obliged. Okay. Thank you, Tony O'Driscoll of O'Driscoll Transport in Glanmire. I was talking earlier on, just a quick one, because I've been hauled over the coals, the barbecue coals on this one. I was talking about artificial flavour, smoky bacon flavour, whether it was a packet of crisps or, you know, a rasher or a sausage, whatever the case may be. And the fact now that they're saying that the artificial flavourings are actually dangerous for you. You should research the cruelty behind the pig products you're talking about before you promote them, Neil. What's the difference between pigs and dogs? Not much, apart from our social conditioning. We say that pigs are for food and dogs are for pets. Pigs have emotions, intelligence, and individual personalities, just like our pet dogs. The majority of pigs are factory farmed in Ireland and killed in gas chambers, which have been proven to be cruel, but financially efficient for mass killing. Love the show. Can't come on the air. Hope you get to read this out. Thank you. I often, you know, challenge myself or have long conversations with myself as to why I eat meat when I hear of texts like that where they talk much to the cruelty of the animals that are slaughtered for our tables. Maybe I'm a hypocrite even saying that. I have my smoked rashers every Sunday and you can't bait them with a fry. The grandkids love them. You can get the smoky bacon crisps in Aldi. Thank you, Frick. They're probably the tato ones. I had more of a graw for the Sam Spuds ones as to whether they're still around or not. Anyway, everything's bad for you these days. Back after the break.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
And they say you can't get taxi drivers either, whether it's to do with the money or the state of the cars or whether it's the long hours or the unsocial hours. It's probably all of the above. Text 0868 104 106. I mentioned earlier on issues involving what we eat, people giving up meat, animal cruelty that led us along to pigs and the slaughtering of pigs and things like that. And it's very interesting because this also ties in to people's driving habits, right? I was telling you about, somebody says this is quite common. I don't know. Is it some kind of fun or people doing it for fun that they're driving with the driver's door open? I saw it yesterday. Somebody texted me saying that's happening all of the time. Maybe it's just something people do for kicks. But this video actually has to do with a fella sitting up in the boot of a hatchback and the boot is up and he's sitting on the back with a rope, and off the rope is a horse or a pony or something on a main road. So he's pulling the horse as the car is being driven by somebody else. So he's got the rope in one hand and he's looking at his mobile phone with the other, and the horse is trotting along after the motor car, the hatchback. And there's all traffic coming and going and there's Arctic's passing and everything. I don't know how frightened the horse is or anything. I don't know the reason behind this as to whether they're just taking the horse out for a bit of exercise or what have you. But it was shared with me last night and one of the people who saw it was Councillor Ken O'Flynn, who reported it to the Gardaí. Am I missing something here, Ken?
No, you're quite right, Neil. I was coming from my parents' house in Coolone in Blarney, heading back out to the office in the Manor Road. And we came across this, there was quite a slowdown of vehicles around the Blackstone Bridge area and Manor Road area. And we came across this, and the video that was taken is the footage that was taken from myself. Francisco was driving, I was in the passenger seat, and I took a video of this. At times the car sped up. I rang Gronabraha Garda station, I informed them. They had received several telephone calls from concerned motorists of the way the behaviour and the treatment of this animal. First of all, you have somebody with a hatchback with open, hanging out the back of it, we should all be sitting inside in our cars wearing our safety belts inside in the seats, not hanging out of the back of a car with a rope and looking at a mobile phone. You had an animal being put on a concrete road, being dragged along and being pushed, being whether you the various of speeds varied from stretch of road, you know, and then you had ongoing traffic and traffic trying to pass it out, and you had people trying to flash the driver to tell him to stop, you know, including myself, which we received a hurdle of abuse from from the people that were inside in the car, there was about three or four lads in their 20s inside in the car.
Like what? Mind your own business kind of stuff, is it?
Well, that was a very polite way of putting it.
I'm sure there was a bit of F's and blindings, yeah. But that was the gist of it.
To say the least. Yeah, and, you know, to stop videoing them and, you know, all the sort of carry on. Look, Neil, the reality here is that there is an ongoing situation when it comes to a particular type of group who have horses in our city, who are not treating them humanely, who are treating them appallingly, as far as I'm concerned. This goes back to, and it's been highlighted on your show.
I'm blue in the face talking about this, but none of that makes a blind bit of difference. It's just a waste of time talking about. Yeah.
Well, I don't think it is. I think.
Oh no, it is. Because sulky racing continues. You still see emaciated ponies and foals and horses in housing estates tethered to an old bit of stick or up against a pole. You've seen them dead from starvation, dehydration. Nothing's changed.
Yeah. No, and look, what I'm saying is that we now need to step up our game here in Cork City Council. We now need to step up our game in the city, and that means all the stakeholders included. In fairness to the guards, they did get a squad car down, and I hope to God there's a prosecution, not only for the dangerous driving, but also for the animal cruelty. We all know that putting a horse on concrete road is not the best standard of practices for training horses or for exercising horses. I don't know where this horse came from, who this horse has belonged to, but what I'm saying to you, Neil, is
you're suggesting it's travellers own the horses, is it?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Be under no illusion there. I'm telling you, from the people that shouted abuse at me, they were certainly of the ethnic minority group that they like to be identified as now. That's the reality of it. I'm telling you that there is a serious problem when it comes to horses in this city. Kilkenny County Council, in fairness to them, under the leadership of Mayor McGuinness about 3 or 4 years ago, introduced a ban of sulky racing and gave Gardaí powers to stop sulky racing on their streets and in their parks and in their open public spaces. I'm saying here that, you know, we need to be doing the same. We have to be giving the guards have a right to stop, of course, because of what was going on and the offences that were being committed.
I think that the Garda Síochána are probably browned off trying to talk to certain members of the public, and they just get nowhere with them. They're independent of the law.
That's fine, but we have to seize the animals. The important thing here that we have to remember is that there are animals that are being treated in appalling conditions. Like this is an animal that we've had situations in Dublin Hill where we've had sulkies being brought through Dublin Hill and into Ballyvillan and the rest of it. The horse is so whipped and exhausted that they collapse, and immediately what's done is they leave the horse there and they move out, they take off their trap or their sulky and off they move, and it's not my horse at all, it's not my problem. And for people to come along,
it's
and
part
say,
of the, it's part it's part of their tradition though apart. It is part of their tradition.
What cruelty. Yes, I agree, because that to me is animal cruelty. I agree, Neil.
Keeping horses and keeping ponies, Neil,
if your next door neighbour was beating or kicking your dog or starving your dog, you would be onto the RSPCA.
Yeah.
So why is there not a rule for you? If Neil Prendeville was treating an animal badly, wouldn't I be reporting Neil Prendeville? Would there not be a rule for you?
Yeah.
And why should there be a rule for other people?
Yeah.
That's all I'm looking for, Neil. I'm not looking to exclude a group. I'm not looking to misappropriate a group. I'm not looking to damage a group. What I'm looking for is fairness. And I can't abide the idea that there is one rule for me and one rule for you.
Good point. Okay, let's get some more thoughts on it. Text 0868104106. Can I ask you, are you canvassing at the moment?
I am. I'm knocking at doors. I'm out for the last 6 weeks and I'm 60% through it.
Okay, so you're actually knocking on the door, not sneaking up to the door, shoving in a pamphlet and running away.
No, listen, there's one thing you can say about the Flynns, right? We'll take it on the chin.
So,
whatever people
so
have to say
what are you
about,
getting on the doorsteps? I'm curious then.
Well, look, I'll be honest with you. People are very dissatisfied with the government. People are upset about the refugee situation on a national front, on a national idea. They are very concerned. I have people that have met, that I've met with medical cards that have been taken off them, people in their 70s plus that have lost out on medical cards. They can't understand why they're losing out on their medical cards when there's people entering the country that never paid into any system that are being issued with medical cards. That's very difficult for a lot of people to take.
I've been talking to locally. Some people who've just lost their disability allowances overnight. Something happened where somebody did a deep dive in the Department of Welfare or something and decided knock that person off.
I'll be honest with you, Neil, I'm doing an awful lot of appeal letters at the moment, whether it be social welfare or under compassionate medical grounds for people that would have a lot of medication that would be... I'll give you one example without identifying the gentleman. I have one gentleman who's €2.90 over on a pension, and his medical card was taken off him at 75, and he's on six different types of medication.
So they're talking to you on the doorstep about the inequity of how Irish people are treated as opposed to those that were welcoming
for themselves. And that's what I'm hearing all the time. It's the inequity, and it's the disparity between who's coming into the country, how people are entering the country. Nobody is racist. Nobody is giving a racist remark. Nobody's talking about religion. Nobody's talking about colour of skin. People are talking about how our government is able to bring in 100,000 refugees and another additional amount of refugees that we can't identify, being those that have torn off their passport. People are very upset about that. People are saying to me, I can't understand how I've worked all my life. I paid into a system and I can't get fairness and I can't get equity. Like people telling me, if I take in a Ukrainian refugee, I can get €400 to €800 a month if they're a couple or they're a mother and daughter or whatever, a mother and father, whatever. I can bring that in, but I can't if I bring my son and my daughter-in-law or my son and his partner or my daughter and her partner into my house. Nobody look after me.
So housing is an issue on the doors as well, then, is it?
Housing is a huge issue. More locally, of course, the water and the lack of commitment from the government of committing the €500 million that needs to be spent in the north side of the city to upgrade our water system.
Oh yeah, of course, because for many years now they're drinking dirty, filthy water. Yeah.
Correct. And the health and safety issues. And, you know, there isn't an estate that I go into where people are asking me, can you get something done with traffic calming? Can you slow down the traffic? Can we get either signs, chicaning, speed bumps, etc.? The amount of speed that's coming through the area.
So much of the things you're hearing on the doorstep would be the same 5 years ago or 10 years ago or 15 years ago when canvassing for local elections. The only addition now is
you'll always get the local issues. The local issues don't change, you know. They go from a state to a state. They change in where area or, you know, the demographic, of course, you know, the things that you've carried out work with, you know. People are very upset about the quality of the footpaths. They're very upset with Eamon Ryan refusing to do the audit of Cork City footpaths because we've all seen...
Wait a second, we've got a blight of footpaths. What are they talking about? There's never more footpaths.
You're aware that Eamon Ryan has refused to do an audit of footpaths through Cork City. I think it was highlighted in the Irish Times. It was certainly
in the
Evening Echo.
There are
footpaths throughout, and I happily take you through the north side and show you the condition of footpaths.
Oh, well, that's different.
Where people are tripping, where people are falling, where people are, have damaged their people with potholes that have damaged their cars, etc. And not there the day to day, but water issues that happen in the local election.
Have you posters up?
Certainly the big issue. I put up 170 posters, I think, so far. I really don't like the idea of putting up posters, Neil. I wrote to all the general secretaries of all the parties and said, can we have an agreement in Cork that we don't? I got one acknowledgement letter from one person and no reply. I really don't think in a time where we live in the world of social media, when we have door-to-door, when we have propaganda and whatever that we can put out, and I mean propaganda in the nicest sort of way, propaganda is probably the wrong word to use. Communication is a better word to use, in fairness.
But you had to put them up because all of the others wouldn't keep them down, is it?
Yeah, okay. That's the thing. And you know what? I don't like doing it, and I think it's a bloody waste. I think it's an eyesore, and I don't think anybody appreciates it.
Okay.
And I think there was I think on the Journal actually yesterday, I think 93% of people said they didn't like it.
Okay, so you've joined, very finally, you've joined Independent Ireland. This is the political party set up by Michael Collins?
Michael Collins, that's okay. Correct.
And yes. What's the one main platform? Is it for Ireland to be independent or what? Of what?
No, it's for common sense. It's for a common sense approach to politics. And, you know, let me just be clear.
Is it an anti-migration party?
No, absolutely not. It's common sense approach. It's listening to people, not NGOs. It's about listening to the people on the ground, doing what they want, listening to
Is it Ireland is full kind of thing?
No.
Okay.
Ireland isn't full. There's none of us outside Apple Computers protesting for the 95 languages that are spoken outside there and saying foreigners go home, right? Mm. You know, that's the reality of it. No, nobody has a problem. And you know my background in particular, you know, that I'm married to a Spanish man. Yeah. And many people have pointed that out on social media as a crutch to beat you with, you know. And of course, you're going to get some homophobic people as well. That's great. And look, that's grand. Look, best of luck to them. And if they think that's going to bring me down, that's okay too. But
is it a case that if you're coming here, you need to pull your weight and work for a living and be a contributor, is it?
Absolutely, Neil.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I don't think that's much to ask.
Okay.
I don't think that's much to ask. And certainly don't come into this country without your passport.
All right, appreciate
it. Don't come into this country and expect a handout.
Which unfortunately seems to be the case more so than ever now. Thank you for that, Kenneth Flynn. My apologies if I know there's a call there. I'll come back. Don't see the name of the caller, but we'll talk to you. Catherine, my apologies, Catherine. I hope that you can wait. I'll chat with you directly after 11. Don't go anywhere.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
I will be updating again with the caller that we had on air earlier in the week regarding Liberty Insurance. So it would be good to be able to get that call set up, because I did get a response from Liberty. It's quite disappointing. And I'll tell you more about it when we have the caller back on air again. The gist of it was that when calling Liberty Insurance to get a quote, everything was going nicely, filling in the quote and everything, was talking to somebody on the phone at Liberty or a call agency or whatever the case may be. And then when she gave her address as being Knocknaheeny, she said that the person on the other end of the phone says, we're not covering insurance in that area at the moment. So more on that in a few minutes' time, because I want to update on that. Mind you, I did get a text on it. And it's somewhat unfair. It's very critical, claiming that I'm living in cuckoo land, not realizing why, for instance, an insurance company wouldn't wish to give out car insurance for Knocknaheeny. Texter says, are you for real? You know full well why they pay higher car insurance or can't get it at all. Only a couple of weeks ago, you had the blood motorbike fella on the radio where his bike was stolen and was being driven to death above in Knocknaheeny. Have you any update on that one? I don't, actually. I need to find out if the bike was recovered or what have you. They get cheaper or free houses up there. And that's the reason, because of the crime. Because they get cheaper or free houses. They've nothing to do all day, is it? So that woman expects us drivers to pay for higher chances of her car being stolen in Knocknaheeny. I know what you're trying to say. You're talking about they go on the basis of risk and nothing more than risk. And if the risk is too high, they don't want to quote. So I have a response. So I'll come to that in a few minutes. But my apologies, because Catherine has been holding and holding and holding. So let me do that first. Catherine, good morning.
Good morning, Nate.
You've been very kind and very patient. You wanted to pick up on, I think it was the conversation with Ken O'Flynn and the mistreatment and cruelty of animals. Yeah.
Yes, it was. And it's just more of it. And as you said yourself, you've spoken about it so many times on the radio. Nothing has been done about it. The animals are just worthless. They're being treated just so badly. Like, the guards should really have, you know, they should do something about it. It should be acted upon if the animals aren't being treated.
They're blue, but they're probably blue in the face. And I don't mean to be disingenuous or unkind in any section of society, but I imagine there are people that they just get nowhere with. They just don't want to listen. They don't care.
But wasn't there a law passed that animals couldn't be kept, that they could be taken away from them?
But the guards can't be taken, horses and foals and ponies. Like, what are they going to do with them?
No, but it should be a pound that they're brought to.
Well,
it should be a pound. They should be taken away. Like driving up, when you drive up Spring Lane in Blackpool, there's a load of goats on top of a pile and pile of rubbish that's there all the time. It's constantly, when you drive up Spring Lane, there are three or four goats, there are horses all at the side, and people just turn a blind eye to it.
You saw the video of your man with the rope out the back of the hatchback, did you?
That's horrific. Absolutely horrific. So it would be kinder for that animal to be taken away by a vet and euthanized.
Well, that clearly is a road, but that's a road, okay. That's a road traffic offence to start with. It's probably cruelty. Is that prosecutable, to be cruel to an animal? It is.
It should be.
Yeah.
It should, of course, be. And it shouldn't be accepted that's somebody's culture to mistreat something like that and to do that to an animal.
But we dance around that culture an awful lot. We're very touchy-feely about it. We're very delicate about criticising a minority because they've got a lot of organisations that would be quick to bite back or, you know, you'd have all sorts of issues.
How would they answer that one? How would they answer? How would that organisation answer that animal being dragged along the road by a car?
I spoke on this issue a number of years ago and we had a lot of calls on the air and people were very critical. And I had a broadcast complaint lodged against me by an organization that would represent a minority group like this. And it was upheld and I had to apologize on air for being unbalanced and unfair and sharing the stories that people had with regards to certain members of the travelling community. It was a broadcast complaint. So this is what you're dealing with when you try and talk of topics like this.
You're shut down?
Well, pretty much. Yeah, pretty much that time I was. Yeah, pretty much. Down. Pretty much. So there you have it.
We're living in a threat. Yeah, it's dreadful. And just on a totally different matter. There's no people living outside the Savoy as well as the Savoy inside in town with camps. It's a tent city. They've moved. Debenhams are shut off. They've put up wood.
They're professional beggars. You know that.
Yeah, well, they were there now the other day playing cards, big bottles of drink, whatever, a foreign drink.
But they're not genuine.
They're living there. Living outside.
I think they go home.
Foreign.
They go home. They're picked up in cars and vans.
There's tents there now. There's tents there. A camping situation outside the Savoy.
In Cork, tents on Patrick Street.
Yes,
I
saw 2 days ago.
And nobody tries to move them on? Nothing?
No, nothing. There was people outside Debenhams, but no, there's tents outside the Savoy.
And they're living in the tents, you're saying? So they're all of the time?
Well, they must be. They must be living there because the tents are there. Why else are they there? They must be living there.
Oh, my God. Just when you
think
you're
heard
it all.
Because I wouldn't come to town that often. Yeah. So that's part of it.
Just be aware. Just be aware when you do. And if you are, you know, generous in nature, just be very careful as to who you're giving money to, will you? Because there's an awful lot of them are chancers.
Yeah. Oh, God, no, I'd rather donate to something else. But just two different things.
Well, thanks for the observation, Catherine.
Jump back to the horse cruelty. Like, it's a pity something can't be done. It's a pity that's still allowed to happen.
Okay, thank you for that. Let me stay with the city, actually, because I was talking this morning about that shocking rape case in the papers with regards to the young child, and she told her mother, and your man is off to jail now for a number of years. The front page of the Echo today. You mention these kind of things with regards to the molestation of raping or minors, but you don't mention about the person who people claim to be a foreigner, caught apparently molesting or raping a boy in Merchants Quay over the weekend. That's the allegation anyway. The videos are going around and people are shouting at him. And they're holding him by the bench until the guards were called. No mention of that. I did mention that if you were listening to the program on Monday morning, in a limited manner in what I can say, because of course these are allegations that are being investigated by the Gardaí. So it's not as if I haven't mentioned. I did on Monday. But again, you are talking, like, people are claiming that the person is not Irish and others are claiming that he may well be Ukrainian. I haven't a clue where the fella's from. All I know is that English would appear not to be his first tongue. But a lot of texts on that again, and more this morning, following how I started the programme. Any news reporting at all on the sexual assault of a minor in Merchants Quay last Thursday? Again, I'd love to be able to just go for it and just chat away mad about things like this, but I'm precluded because of the fact that it's a guard investigation and I can't do anything. I mean, I had the sister of the lad wanting to come on air, but that would identify a minor and that would get me into all sorts of trouble then when there would be a court case involving the identification of a minor. But in relation to the boy, why don't you bring on your local TDs if they want votes and ask them that this is the result of open borders and men unvetted who are grooming our children. Why protect the predators? Because listening to what you're talking about, it sounds like They would be the very first to deem us racist if we air an opinion on protecting our children from groomers. Can I also say well done to the local hero who came to the aid of the child? He should be accredited for it more. We need men and women and children like to be safe rather than victimized and not feeling safe in our own nation. Hi, why no mention of the foreigner apparently caught molesting the child in Merchants Quay at the weekend? I'm just wondering if you have any information about what happened last Thursday regarding that boy and the attempted sexual assault that took place in the bathroom. The video is circulating. The boy's mother can be heard and another man. At least somebody came to intervene. I don't know that there's any update on that. We did get on to Garda Síochána on Monday and they said that it was under investigation, an incident at Merchants Quay. If all of this is true, which I believe it to be, because I was in Merchants Quay yesterday with my young family and witnessed young fellas of a certain ethnic group robbing deals in the shopping centre. Two members of staff were trying to get the stuff back from them. No security guards seemed to be helping the staff members. The young fellows were making fools out of the staff and they knew because they were underage they couldn't be touched. Now, that's not in any way related to the other incident from last week. What's more alarming is that no one is commenting or speaking about it in the media or the news. If you have anything that you could shine on it at all, it would be great because this is a serious issue for our children. I've often sent my seven-year-old across into the toilet in Merchants Quay if we were in the pantry having something to eat. Now I will not let him out of my sight. The city has been turned into a joke. And then somebody was observing all sorts of carry-on on Mary Elms Bridge. Just be wary going over that because there are a lot of people hanging out in that bridge openly drinking and taking drugs and fighting and shouting and roaring at each other. So that's another observation from the city centre. And one final one, my seven-year-old is at an age where he's questioning everything. How do you explain what happened to the child in the toilet in Merchants Quay? We have two-year-old twins also, but thankfully they're too young to have an idea what's going on. Keep them coming. Text 0868 104 106. Back after the break.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Yes, we talk about housing this morning, even though we want to welcome people in here to work and to pull their weight and things like that. At the same time, of course, the issue is where will people live? Jim says this is a battle we won't win. Where are we with all of these new homes? There was an announcement of 32,695 new housing units built in the last 12 months. This would include all new build homes and apartments. So 32,500. There were 8,500 new mortgages drawn down in the last 12 months. This is the people buying their own home, right? So he says, on that basis, you can assume that 24,500 of the homes have no mortgage drawn down and therefore are for social housing. So we in a country are building 75% more houses for social housing than we are for young, hardworking people of Ireland. I know social housing goes to workers as well, but your wages should allow you to buy your own home, shouldn't it? You're right in that regard, actually, because I read in a report last week that only 25% of all of the new builds in Ireland actually go to people with a mortgage trying to buy them themselves. The rest, 75% of them, tens of thousands, go directly to, at a rate of 3-1, to social housing. So for those trying to buy their own homes, of course, there are much, much less. And they're much, much dearer now than ever before. And then Ken O'Flynn was on by people who were just cut off different services. Interesting one here where he says, and I won't give out his details, he said, I'd like to get this out there. I had my own business. Due to inflation costs and running costs, we had to sell some assets. I went on Job Seekers after working all my life. I started working at 14 and a half. I paid tax, I paid stamp all my working life from the age of 14. I'm 59 now. I was asked to apply for carers for my mother, which we were looking after Mam at home because she has dementia. So I applied, and when I applied, I was automatically cut off Job Seekers as I was unavailable for work. I met the inspectors about the carers. I have to say I didn't find them very nice. I never felt so low with regards to the way they made me feel. Anyway, I was turned down for carers. Said I didn't send in all the paperwork, which I did. So I appealed it straight away, and 10 months down the line, I'm still waiting for an answer. In the meantime, I have zero income for the last 10 months. I'm so depressed and so let down by this country. Can't come on air from personal reasons, but feel free to read it out. So somebody worked all of his life from 14 to 59, had to fold the business. Mother was getting old and suffering with dementia and living with him, so he's entitled to be his mother's carer. So he made the application for carers, got cut off job seekers, got refused carers, and 10 months later hasn't had a penny of support coming in from the state in the last 10 months. That's the kind of inequity, I suppose, people are talking about, really, isn't it? And like, where's the justice in things like that? As you know, you talk about justice. I was reading again earlier in the week, the Moynihan family, who since March of 2001, are trying to get justice for their son who lost his life. It was deemed at the time to be death by misadventure. He was out with a pal of his back in the day, Adrian Moynihan, and they'd been drinking. And there was a lot of drink, and no one is disputing that. Himself and his pal Darrow were out. And there was an altercation outside Sidetracks nightclub. It's March of 2001, over two decades ago, right? Because they were refused entry, something kicked off. I think it's been accepted that Adrian threw a slap at one of the bouncers, and then two other bouncers, three of them in total, piled on, and Adrian ended up being dragged in to the kind of foyer area of Sidetracks and ended up dead from asphyxiation. And there was an inquest, there was a coroner's report, there was a file went to the DPP and everything like that, and it was proved that he died of asphyxiation because of the way that he was restrained in the club and things like that. But the DPP back in the day ruled that nobody should be prosecuted in relation to the death. And the jury delivered a verdict of death by misadventure. Now, one would wonder if it were today now, particularly with regards to what happened regarding the Stardust fire in 1981, where unlawful killing would have been the verdict that was eventually, after all these years, handed down with regards to the Stardust 48, 49, if you include an unborn baby, the verdict being unlawful killing. But the Moynihan family have never, ever given up. And my conversations over the years would have been on some occasions with Adrian's brother, but on many occasions back in the day with his dad, Andrew, who joins me by phone. Andrew, good morning.
Good morning, Niall.
It's been a long time. How have you been?
Oh, we've been very good. Very good, thank God.
Okay.
Very good.
Yeah. You're not on a speakerphone, are you, Andrew? Are you speaking to the phone? Or have you got a speakerphone?
I'm speaking to you on my mobile.
Oh, fair play. Okay. And I recall many of the conversations that I had with you down through the years. I remember one particular time when you went on hunger strike, remember?
Yes, that's right. And we were promised a lot of things that time by the Minister for Justice at the time, Mr. McDowell.
Yeah.
And nothing became of that. Like, we've been shoved from pillar to post, and at the end of the day, we're back where we started. We have nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah.
He told us one time that we should go to the Attorney General, which we did. And the Attorney General said he could do nothing, and that Mr. McDowell should have known that because he was a former Attorney General.
Because the DPP said that nobody should be prosecuted, that the bouncers couldn't be prosecuted, that there wasn't a case to answer. But I remember years back, and I was reading again, Bernard Allen got very much involved in your case back in the day, didn't he? He was calling on the Minister for Justice to set up an inquiry. None of that happened.
None of that happened. Bernard Allen was very, very good. He was one of very, very few people who helped us. One of very few. He did everything he could.
Yeah, that was a long time ago. Like, that was 21 years ago.
That's right, yes.
But you keep on going, though. You as a family, you don't give up. Is it the inquest verdict that was delivered that you want changed?
Of course. Like the Stardust, we were told that we couldn't have certain things. She told us that from the start, Moira Cunanan, that we couldn't have unlawful killing. Unlawful death. that it had to be a certain thing that suited. But I mean, that had lately that has all changed, especially with the Stardust situation,
where it was deemed to be unlawful killing on a premises.
Yes, that's right. That couldn't. That was not on the agenda. Mm. And the people that was there, the jury, if you like, in people, mm. they were told that in no uncertain fashion by the Myra, Myra Colnan.
Because I was death by misadventure, but because I was just reading up on it again recently, it would have been somebody kneeling on his back or holding him by the throat. Correct me if I'm wrong.
They had his hands behind his back and kneeling on his back as well, and when they were asked, when did they stop putting pressure on him? They said, when he stopped struggling. But he was dead and he couldn't struggle no more then. And that was three or four of them. And you have this man, excuse me.
And do we know, Dara was there at the time. Did Dara ever, was your son crying out, stop?
He couldn't cry out. He couldn't cry out, nor he had no breath in him because of the position that he was put in. He was inside the exit doors and they closed the doors, the four of them. He was there on his own with them.
And can we see that in video footage from outside the door being closed, Andrew?
Yes, you can see it all. It's all as clear as day on the video.
Yeah, yeah.
And as well as that, Niall, sure, look what happened there in America there with this man, George Floyd.
Yeah.
There was only one man on him. And yes, he was deemed to have been killed. But yes, arson, no misadventure. Doesn't make sense.
There was a huge Garda investigation into it, looking at the paperwork. Over 70, am I right in saying that there was over 70 lines of inquiry, or certainly 70 statements taken? There was loads of video evidence was checked and everything. And then when the Gardaí had their everything done, they sent it to the DPP.
That's correct.
And then you as a family then were waiting for the DPP to make a decision.
Yes, we were.
And that decision, on what grounds did they say no prosecution?
Not enough of evidence.
Yeah.
Not enough of evidence, and yet they had 70 people who had given statements to the fact what they saw and how he was restrained, and yet nothing done.
That evidence would have included at the time the deputy state pathologist Dr. Marie Cassidy, who's now retired, and she said that Adrian's death was asphyxia due to having his neck compressed or held.
Yes, she was baffled. She was baffled at how this case hasn't gone forward long ago. She was just baffled.
And what do you as a family now wish Simon Harris to do?
We wish for an apology, a public apology, like the people from the Stardust who deserve their thing in court as well, and they deserve an apology. We accept it the same. Expect the same, sorry.
Do you just wish for it to end with an apology? You don't wish this to be reopened again with regards to a possible prosecution, even all these years later, no?
Apology, we would be quite satisfied with an apology.
And have you written to the Taoiseach in that regard?
Yes, my son Alan has written to him. He has written to him, and we've got news back that he has received this. He has received this letter, and he's whatever he's doing, we're waiting to find out what that is.
Mm. What was it like when you got the news? And obviously, yourself and Lily had to like race to, was it the South Infirmary, I think, at the time?
Yeah, we were in bed, actually. We were in bed and a guard came into our bedroom and told us that we needed to be in the South Infirmary. That our son was in an accident, an altercation. And we're halfway over and he told us that they were making correspondence and he told us it was too late. We thought he was talking about the hour of the night. But it was that he had passed away, he was dead.
Every parent's nightmare, Andrew.
Of course, yes. Of course. And like that's bad enough now, but when you find out then that there's no one responsible, you have a dead person there and no one responsible. So how could that be? I mean, he didn't kill himself. I mean, there's not, like, it doesn't make sense.
Mm.
And for learned people above there in the Dáil there, for them to be come back and tell us that there's nothing that was done wrong, doesn't make sense.
You did hunger strike. Was that outside the Dáil?
That was outside the Dáil, no, but that was only for 2 days, for God's sake. No. But we were told, I was told then, that things were going to take a different turn for us.
That's why you stopped. Yeah, you stopped because you were told something yes. would be done to, as you say, make it right.
Yes, and Charlie Bird, God bless him, he was very good to me outside there. He used to bring me water there for the 2 days. He was very, very good.
If you think, if it were now in 2024, do you think that there wouldn't be a death by misadventure verdict from an inquest?
No, of course not. Of course not. So we've come a long way since, haven't we? Well, we hope we have.
Yeah.
And then, as I said, when you read about the things that's going on in America about this man Floyd, and I think it's happened on several occasions since, and yes, it's death by misadventure for us, and it's from Mr. Floyd.
Yeah. I know, and I don't mean to upset you, but you're probably more aware than anybody else of the abrasions and the bruises that Adrian had, not just to his neck, but to his chest and his arms and his legs. Would that have been, yeah, do you believe, as a result of restraint or people upon him?
Well, of course it was. Sure, he was dragged around the concrete, like underground. He was dragged by 4 people. You know, that you'd have to get abrasions for that, for things like that. Like, God love us, like, I don't want to be saying too much now, but my wife is on an earshot there. But he must have struggled like hell to free himself. Like.
That's the nightmare you live with, I'd say.
It is, of course, yes.
You never gave up, though, as a family. That's powerful, you know, no, that your resolve is as strong now as ever.
No, and my son Alan, he's fantastic for putting things together and for trying to get to the bottom of any solution, whether it be this or anything else. He's fantastic.
And how old would Alan have been at the time when Adrian died at 23?
Alan is 51 now, I think 51 or 52, 23, he'd have been 29.
His older brother, yeah. Adrian would be very proud of the family to know that you never gave up.
Yeah, but to something that he would be doing if it was one of us. We are a very close family now.
Is it a closed file with An Garda Síochána now, do you know, Andrew?
That I don't know. Yeah. That I don't know. I don't think it should be.
No, I'm just curious, because sometimes you hear An Garda would say that it's still an open investigation, but I'm wondering if the DPP says no. Is that the book closed forever then?
Well, I suppose the DPP would say if new evidence came in.
New evidence.
But we don't know, like, what else new could come in than what they already have.
Well, we know that Adrian was refused. We've acknowledged, of course, and you have, that there was a lot of Bev on board. He was refused
That's
entry.
Not true,
is it not?
That's not true.
Is it not?
That's not true.
Okay.
That's
okay.
Not true. It's his mate that was refused.
That's right.
And Adrian went to try to pacify him and tell him like that, I'll watch him. And I said, no, no. And Adrian told him to go away and shook hands with the owner. Shook hands with the owner when this the security man came over and passed some derogatory remark into his ear, and that set the whole thing off.
That's my apologies for that. I had read somewhere yesterday that there was a lot of alcohol on board. I'm not saying that makes anything better or worse. Don't get me wrong in that regard, Andrew. I'm not apportioning any blame. One thing led to another. There was a slap. That's all very well for that to happen. But what happened next is your son then being dragged in to the nightclub by the bouncers.
Yes.
Inside.
Yes. The exit doors opened. Now you can see all this. And he was dragged in. He was wrestled to the ground, face down, and then they put his hands behind his back and knelt on him.
Oh, it's horrific. It is horrific. It is. So at this stage, and much of this has been driven on again, and rightly so, by the result of unlawful killing for the Stardust deaths in 1981, you're waiting now for Simon Harris to respond to your communication with him as a family.
That's correct.
Yeah. And what power would he have, do you think, to make this right?
Well, isn't he after doing so for the Stardust, didn't he?
So that would involve an inquiry?
Of course, yes.
A full inquiry into Adrian's death?
Yes, yes.
Where witnesses would all be called, just like the Stardust inquiry?
Yes, exactly. Well, all those files are in the guards, in the guards' hands. They have everything that was involved in that incident.
That would be such a wonderful thing to happen.
It would, of course.
It really would be a wonderful thing to happen.
Small, but something big as well.
Pardon me?
It would be something small, but still would mean an awful lot to us.
And if he says there's nothing he can do, what then, Andrew?
Oh, we keep fighting, Niall. We keep fighting because you can't say that it, for one crowd this is right and for one crowd this is not right. You can't do that. We're all in it together.
Will you let us know if you get a response or what happens next?
Oh God, we will. We will, Niall. You've been good to us, Niall, and we will keep you informed to anything we find out.
Well, I've never forgotten you anyway, Andrew, I can tell you that.
No, you haven't. You haven't.
And I never will.
Thank you very much for that.
You're a lovely family. Look after each other. Talk again soon. We'll see what happens next, Andrew, all right?
Okay, God bless. Thank you.
And you too. Regards to you all. Text 0868 104 106 after the break.
Call Neil now. 0818
104
106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Elise describes what the Moynihan family are going through as horrendous. Another texter here says Adrian was unlawfully killed, Neil. They need to change his death certificate the same way the police officer killed George Floyd. What is the difference here? Well, it'll be interesting to see what Simon Harris does about this, or whether he gets involved in it himself personally, or bats it off to a government department or somebody else. The family are calling for a tribunal, as in a tribunal of inquiry to everything involved in what happened on that night all those years ago. And I see a lot of other texts coming in on this, so keep them coming. Text 0868 104 106. I will come back to it. Can I just, if you don't mind, because I'm interrupting Audrey's holidays at the moment, my apologies. I believe she's overseas sunning herself. Audrey, good morning.
Hi, Neil. How are you?
I'm good, girl. Where are you? You're probably in Spain or Portugal or somewhere like that, is it?
Alicante.
Oh, lovely. You getting a bit of sun?
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful.
I'd say we're getting better temperatures than you, are we? What kind of temperature?
20, 23.
Oh, no, you're beating us, all right. Okay.
23 today.
Okay. Listen, I got a response back from Liberty. You're not going to believe what they said, but could you let's just recap again. You were going through car insurance, stuff like that. You were kind of shopping around. Your renewal was way too high and you were looking at other options. One of them was Liberty. Did you ring up and speak to somebody or did you fill in an online application?
First, I filled in the online application, and when we got to the end of it, the process stopped saying, sorry, we cannot process this now. So I rang straight away, and the girl on the phone, when she took my name and my date of birth, you can see where I stopped, and literally just said to me that, sorry, we're not insuring in that area. I asked her to repeat it back, and she did, and I said, okay, thank you, and goodbye. I was shocked. That was the end of it.
Okay. Now, when we... This was the area being Knocknaheeny. We are not insuring in this area. Then you got another call back from somebody else or something, was it?
The following evening, from Liberty, apologising and saying that the girl, it wasn't her department and she shouldn't have said that to me and they should give their staff more training. And that's it, basically. Could she give me a quote? You can give me all the quotes you want. They said, but 5 minutes after that phone call, I got short.
All right. You got insurance elsewhere. You didn't want to do anything with them.
Yeah.
But were they on that last phone call, were they actually going to offer to give you a quote for a car kept in Knocknaheeny at that stage? Okay.
Yeah.
But so they put it down to employee error.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you buy that?
I don't, because if you're looking at a screen and you're talking to someone, you will tell them what's on the screen. The phone calls are recorded.
Yeah.
Why would she say that to me?
Okay, if she didn't have the information to work with.
Yes.
That's the information she was working with. Like, because I was thinking, is it that they might have a map of, say, Cork, and there might be red zones, or there might be green zones, or you know what I mean? Areas where there's too much.
Yeah, I do.
Okay. So Liberty then told me that they were listening to my conversation with you the morning you were on the air, and that they would come back with a response the next day, right?
Yeah,
this is all I got for them. And this is just absolutely bizarre. They said, Liberty does not comment on individual policies. They said, more broadly, Liberty seeks to provide a positive customer experience and resolve customer issues when contacted. So that tells us absolutely nothing.
Nothing. In other words, they're not entertaining.
They didn't say that it was an employee error or a staff mistake, nor did they confirm or deny whether there are areas of Cork that they refuse to insure. But I haven't got any other calls from anybody, and this may come across of in defence for Liberty. I haven't come across any other calls since I spoke to you or texts from people in Knocknaheeny or in areas on the north side who were refused insurance by Liberty.
Like I said, firstly, I've never, ever heard of it. Why that lady on the phone said that, I don't know. Okay. I'd love for you to hear the phone call.
Well,
because it was only a couple of seconds.
Yeah.
But that's not going to happen. But that is what I told you was exactly what happened.
She said the words, the agent said, that Liberty were not quoting for that area.
Yeah.
So the implication there is the risk of covering somebody's car in Knocknaheeny was too high.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. Well, that would be my reading of it as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's where we're at, Audrey. I said I'd come back to you. That's as much as I can tell you.
Thank you.
Enjoy the rest of the holiday, Audrey. Take care. It's a very poor response, actually, because it clarifies absolutely nothing. Things are just as vague now as they ever were. Be interesting to see if anybody else has ever been refused insurance. I know in the past, we lived in a time, I don't know whether it exists anymore, where a job application would really depend, the next stage of the application would very much depend on where you came from. And there were areas of the city, and amongst them would have been Knocknaheeny, absolutely, where somebody wouldn't get a job or even get an interview on the basis of where they came from. Anyway, if you've got experiences of being precluded from anything because of where you lived, do share. I won't give up personal details if you don't wish me to get involved in the conversation. Text 0868 104 106. Better still, pick up the phone on 0818 104 106. And of course today, or should I say tonight, is the second semi-final of Eurovision. This was the first one. Needs no introduction. I think our man Seamus O'Neill should have, fingers crossed, arrived in Malmo. Am I right, Seamus?
I am indeed, Neil. I'm in Malmo, arrived yesterday morning here, and I'm already a little bit hoarse, so apologies if I...
What are you hoarse from? Screaming and roaring Crown the Witch, is it?
Absolutely. And singing a lot of songs, yeah. It's all the big buzz, big excitement here. Everyone's going around and shouting, crowning the witch. So yeah, very positive atmosphere and everyone's kind of excited.
Any sign of the witch?
Yes. The witch turned up yesterday. So the Irish Eurovision Fan Club had a kind of a Eurovision quiz yesterday in Fagan's Irish Pub in Malmo yesterday afternoon. And Bambi did turn up. She showed up to us. They showed up to us.
Well, there must have been a massive response when Bambi walked in.
Oh my God, electric, absolutely electric. Everyone just went mad, and again, screaming and roaring, crowning the witch. But it was just a lovely moment. They were only there for a few minutes, but it was just a lovely moment. They wanted to come, and I suppose thank the fans for their support and for travelling over to Melbourne. So it was really lovely.
Okay, you're going to be there for tonight's semi, yeah?
No, I won't be there. I was actually there last night for the rehearsal.
I know, I get confused. There's rehearsals, there's dry runs, there's actual shows, there's all sorts of stuff. I can't follow it.
There is. I know, it's mad. There's like a day before rehearsal, an evening before rehearsal, and then there's an afternoon rehearsal today before the live semi-final that you'll watch on TV. I was there last night.
But the one that you were at last night, there was an audience there.
There was. Oh, okay. Yeah, it's full.
It's
the
full
arena's
on.
Full, and it's done. Oh yeah, and the show is run from start to finish.
I don't mean to poke the bear here now, but what was the audience reaction or participation for the Israeli entry?
Israel, that was a very strange atmosphere, Neil. I've never experienced it before. This is my eighth time at Eurovision, and it was very uncomfortable, I must say. So we were standing to the right of the stage. We were so near the stage, and the Israeli act came on, and straight away there was booing. Now, there was also cheering, and I'd say it was kind of 50-50, booing and cheering. And some people were kind of shouting, Free Palestine. It just made for very uncomfortable viewing, I must say. Some people left the arena during the Israeli performance. Now, not many, because, you know, by the time you'd leave and try to get back in, but some did make their way out during the Israeli song. But it was just very awkward. And even the artists, when they finished, they quickly made their way off stage. There was no hanging about. But it was, I'd never experienced anything like it. It was very strange.
It sounds as if it was quite divisive then.
Very divisive, but very much 50-50. There was a lot of cheering, but equally a lot of booing. And the Israeli fans do travel in numbers to Eurovision every year, so, you know, she obviously, the artist has support from the home Israeli fans, but obviously then there are people who are not happy that Israel is in the competition.
Okay, so there probably will be a repeat performance of that tonight, I would imagine.
Yeah, I would think so. I imagine, though, that the Swedish producers of the show may use some technology to drown out the booing that has been used before in other contests.
But it shouldn't be drowned out, should it? Should it?
Probably not, but I suppose it might just make for better viewing that it's drowned out, maybe. I don't know, because it was uncomfortable.
Okay, and talk to me a little bit before I let you go. Talk to me a little bit about security. Is there a big security presence? Did you notice anything?
Yeah, security is heavy, all right. There's a lot of police on the streets of Malmo. There last night when I arrived at the arena, I could see police officers with guns on the roof of the arena and on the roofs of neighbouring buildings.
And that's not normal. You've never seen any of that in other Eurovisions you've been to.
You would notice security, but not as heavy as this year. There is definitely a noticeable presence. Now, everyone is still walking around and free to move around. There's no restrictions, but you do notice it. And I think yesterday as well, I think there was a pro-Palestine protest, and I think it did stop the train from Copenhagen to Malmo for an hour or two, because I think they were obstructing the tracks. So, you know, there are kind of protests happening here and there. But yeah, there is a noticeable police presence on the street.
A lot going on. So what are we looking at here? We're looking at Switzerland, is it? Croatia?
Yeah.
Ireland?
So tonight,
Ukraine?
16 songs. Yeah. Switzerland performed tonight. They're one of the favourites as well. So look out for them tonight. The Estonian group, Mad Bunch of Lands, but will probably do very well. They're on tonight as well. And also there's an actress from the Netherlands on tonight, and he's another crazy character, but quite funny, and got a huge reaction last night as well. So lots happening. There is an Irish connection tonight, actually. The writer of the Latvian song is a man called Liam Geddes from Mayo. So there is a slight connection there with the Latvian song tonight as well.
Okay, forgive me now for being tick stupid. How does the voting work again? Is it a jury, or is it split between jury and people?
Yeah, so they changed it actually since last year. For the two semi-finals, it's 100% public voting. So it's the people at home watching for the semi-final on Tuesday, and for the semi-final tonight, it's all up to the public. For the final on Saturday, it's 50-50. So it's juries and the public.
Okay. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? If we're 100% public, would that mean that people would be voting for neighbouring countries more, is it?
Yes, sometimes, and sometimes I think the public might vote for more of the crazier novelty acts. So I do prefer having a jury vote in the final, because sometimes the jury might balance things out a little bit. I personally would. I'm in preference of the 50-50 kind of jury public vote.
Okay, so I mean, is the talk then, certainly with regards to the bookies, that I hate to put a downer on things, but that Ireland won't win, that Bambi won't win, that Macroom won't win Eurovision? They'll come close, but probably not close. What's your reading?
I think I don't think we're going to win personally. I know there's a lot of Irish fans who do think they'll win, but I don't know if that's just delusion or excitement. I'm not sure. Certainly top 10 finishes looking likely. The top five, even a possibility, if you look at the bookies. And even things like the number of viewers now looking at Bambi's performance online, it surpassed all the other songs. So there is obviously a lot of interest in Bambi and the performance, which, you know, hopefully will stand to them. But, you know, ideally for me, I'd be delighted with a top 10 finish. The top five would be even better.
Okay, I hope you're around tomorrow, Seamus. I know you're going to have one kick-ass podcast episode because you're there now, and your Eurovision podcast is called "I'm Sorry, 0 Points," and people should be following
we'll do a podcast tomorrow and on Saturday as well, just giving our reactions and thoughts on everything.
Okay, I might try and get a call into you, just a quick one tomorrow, see how tonight goes, and your just thoughts on what happens and stuff like that, and the voting and whatever. Okay, is that okay with you?
Yeah. Of course, no problem at all. And I bumped into Bambi's mother actually yesterday as well, and the family are all very excited and loving the positivity and support that Bambi's getting.
Of course they are. We're all loving it, because it's a first chance in a long, long time for all of us. It would be a wonderful thing. Okay, chat tomorrow. Have a good night tonight. Enjoy yourself.
Thanks. Thanks, Killian. Take care.
Yeah, Bambi's mother now is called Mambi. You know that. Mambi thug.
Yeah.
I love it. Have a good day. Take care of yourself. Lines will stay open. Text 0868 104 106. Pick up the phone on 0818 104 106. You can always share a story by email to neil@redfm.ie. Have a good day. I'll see you tomorrow.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.